Hello, everybody, and welcome to Weekly Manga Recap here on December the 9th, 2015. Chris, what are you freaking out for?
Oh, it's every... It? Look, Nick, I can see it. I can see us. I can see you. Oh, we're everywhere. I feel like an episode of the Brady Bunch is just about to start. Like, I'm like...
It's like, you know, there's only one person... other person on the screen.
No, I like to imagine there's more people. Like, I'm like, oh, hey, look, it's Nick over there, and it's Annalisa's picture. Oh, my God, Captain America, you're here? It's a party everywhere.
Stop turning so much. I hate the fact that you have more hair than me now.
Don't hate that. Trying something different with the hat. Or the hair. There's no hat.
God. You look so much better than the last time I saw you face to face.
Yeah, like, you don't look like a fat piece of shit anymore. You've changed.
I can't just, you know, park myself next to you and feel confident that I look amazing by comparison. It's like, no, that's a handsome son of a bitch.
You're like, shit, now
the both of us are too handsome. God damn it.
You're like, now you're not my fat friend anymore, so I can't take you around to places. I'm sorry, Nick. I'll try to get more hideous for you.
Yeah, I'm sure that some people might be listening to this, though, if they, you know, just listen to it on iTunes or on Podbean. And they're like, what are they talking about? We finally got the video stuff ready. And so, now our faces are on screen so we can do stuff like make facial expressions and we'll know what the fuck's going on. And we'll make all sorts of jokes that you won't know that we're doing unless you watch either YouTube recording or live on Hitbox. You're gonna have to use your eyes instead of listening to it. Well, you can still listen to it in the background.
We're yeah. There's not going to be too many
not really.
Visual jokes, I imagine. Probably not. Although I'm going to jam this episode just for them as often as possible. I'm going to be like, oh, hey, guys, did you see Asta's here today? And I'm like, hey, everybody, it's me, Asta. I'm here to help talk to us about the podcast today. And I'm like, what's that, Kitora, you want to talk to? Hi there, everybody, it's me, Kitora. I'm here as well. Oh, and you're going to make out with Chapstick. Oh, this is so lewd. Oh, you're dirty. I should stay with the world trigger sexual acts until later, I guess. But
yeah, probably. Right. Keep on saving them, I guess. Yeah.
No, the world.
I also dressed for the occasion. Wore my Seirin shirt.
So. Seirin. Oh, I also dressed for the occasion by wearing a Captain America shirt.
It has nothing to do with this.
No, but it really makes me look coordinated with my room right now, so I'm pretty stoked.
Yeah, there you go. Just like, can you tell that Chris likes Captain America? You will after this episode.
Yeah, you'll know by the end of this one. Wait, we have Annalisa on the show!
Yeah, completely neglecting to mention that. I'm sorry. It's hard to tell, because your screen's nowhere on the screen.
Yeah, I'm like, where? Screen,
Where are you? There's just
I'm a ghost!
It's a ghost again! It's the camel ghost, Nick!
The camel ghost is back!
He's here taunting you.
It's great to have Annalisa back on the show. You were in Japan recently.
Yes.
Did you have a good time, I guess?
Yeah, I had a really good time. Very fangirl heavy.
Did you meet Osamu?
I actually kind of did. I went to a World Trigger Doujin event. And there are some really good Osamu cosplayers there.
There are World Trigger Doujin events. That's amazing.
Yes.
Did you plan it, or did you just happen to stumble upon a World Trigger Doujin event? Like, is there just one constantly, like a weekly Doujin event, basically? Or is this trip coordinated to line up with the Doujin event?
This Doujin event happens every few months. There are things in Japan called only events. And they'll have events for specific fandoms or pairings or whatever. And it's kind of weird that they call it an only event because there are actually like 20 only events happening like each weekend. Uh-huh. So the one I went to had like World Trigger. It had two different Haikyuu pairings, Blood Blockade Battlefront, Tokyo Ghoul, Food Wars, and like 15 others. So
awesome.
But clearly I went for World Trigger. So
now, for the people who are uninitiated, what is a doujin, essentially?
It's a fan comic, often pornographic in nature.
Oh. So we almost kind of have a little bit of, like, the written doujin later today.
Yes.
It's called smut, Chris. It's called what it is.
No. It's art. If I print these out into a leather-bound book, will you take my World Trigger fan fictions with you to Japan next time and trade them at the doujin fair?
You know, people do sell their fan fiction there.
I could... Nick, I could be a millionaire!
I don't think that they make that much money.
They haven't seen mine before! They haven't had mine! There's an untapped market just waiting for me to take advantage of it.
You're gonna, like, change the world with your...
Change the world.
Totally
trigger.
Sexy fan fiction.
Alright, back door. I'm gonna have to do this. I'm so pumped.
Anyhow, in case you can't tell from our title card, which you can now see live on the video...
Yes!
...that Steven got for us, we're talking about Siren this weekend. As a few people in the chat have mentioned, Abyss slash Sakurako does not look that buxom.
No, that's a little bit of an
emphasis placed on... That's a little bit of
the
Steve
Mann
style,
yeah.
It's put his own little flair on it, I guess you could say. But it's a series that ran in Shonen Jump, I guess, up until about 5 years ago. Ran for around 3 years or so. And, so we're talking about it this week. And, Annalisa wanted to talk about it with us, so fortunately we managed to time things up so that we got done reading it around the time that she was going to appear on the show. So, yeah.
Well, it's not just that she liked it. You were the letterer for Siren, actually.
Yes, I was the letterer for that series.
So you worked quite intimately with this series, you can say.
Yes, for a very
long time. I don't
want
you to use the
time.
Word intimately.
Don't worry, tonight, the fan fiction later is not going to be very intimate, unless, filthy is intimate.
Depends on what, and how you, yeah, depends on what is included in your definition of the word. So, Siren, is basically, God, it's a little difficult to describe it in short, but basically... This group of people gets sucked into this other world where they develop psychic powers and they kind of participate in this Gantt-style game where they have to earn enough points to win their way out of it while encountering these various dangers. And it's kind of like if the creator of Gantt didn't hate the world, essentially. At least at first... But I think we'll get more into that later on, because the series does go through some significant changes later on. It becomes a very different sort of series. Mm-hmm. But initially, we've got this group of characters, starting off with Yoshina Ageha? I think, or is it Yoshir? I forget what his other name is.
It's
Ageha.
Yoshina, yeah.
Yeah. And he's our
I don't know why I'm correct, I should just leave it open for Annalisa to be like, I actually know all these characters' names.
God, guys, ugh.
He's like, main character dude, chick, big dude, Kurama from Yu Yu Hakusho, but in this series, tall Hiei.
There are quite a few Yu Yu Hakusho comparisons you could make with our main group. But Ageha is essentially the Yusuke. He is this troublemaking kind of guy. He starts off as basically being almost a hired hand. He'll do miscellaneous tasks for people for cheap. He's a sucker for good-looking girls. But he gets roped into the situation because he learns that a girl in his class, who also used to be his childhood friend, named Sakurako, she is somehow part of this thing that has to do with the mysterious Nemesis Q. And there are all these rumors circulating around about what Nemesis Q actually is. And basically it turns out that she's been participating in this game for some time, which Ageha doesn't know about, so he ends up following her into this world to try and protect her. And that's how he gets roped into the situation, as compared to a bunch of other people who get involved because they're lured into the game with promises of lots and lots of money. So that's what sets him apart from it. And, I think that's about where... Oh, wait, I forgot, because the series forgot about him. Also, there's another guy named Hiryu, who also is there. And, he...
Oh, Saga. I was... or is it the Saga or Gasa? The Saga. Right?
Saga.
Okay, I was wondering who you meant for a moment, because I memorized the other name for everybody, basically.
Right, okay, yeah.
And I was like, wait, who's this one?
The dragon guy.
Yeah.
he also gets roped into the situation in Siren, and so he and Ageha have this kind of friendly rivalry, because they're both, you know, these tough guys who get into lots of fights. He's the Kuwabara, essentially, except he's a lot less stupid than Kuwabara is. Much less stupid. He's much more the cool big guy in the group. He's basically Chad. Actually, he's a lot like Chad. An annoying amount like Chad.
Hey, he's useful, okay? Sometimes.
when he's there, he's great. Anyway. So at first, they just go into this, you know, alternate world periodically. They encounter these monsters that have these weird cores in them that give them incredible strength, and they're incredibly dangerous, and they develop these abilities because the other world that they go into essentially unlocks the latent psychic power that every single human actually possesses. So it unlocks that power, and so they can use psychic powers, and also then when they go back into the other world, the atmosphere is much, it's much easier for them to use their psychic powers in, so they gain incredible strength while they're there. So they develop their own different abilities. They all have the same base psychic powers, like there's, Blast?
Enhance,
Rise?
Blast, and Trance are the three, which essentially you can just sort of quantify as Taijutsu, Ninjutsu, Genjutsu. It's the same principles behind them. However, it's a thing, it was like a logical point that there were going to be these three, and they find ways to make them very obtuse to just fit powers by the end of the series. Like, oh, my psionic special is to melt into the wall. And I'm like, how is that? That doesn't seem to fit any of the three. And it's like, it doesn't, but it makes wacky fights. So
and they go into these really long explanations at times about how it's like, oh, it started off as this, but it has this unique property, and then I can program that unique property to do whatever the fuck I want, because it's a Battle Shonen series, and so they can do that. I think the series dwells a little bit too much on explaining things, right? Like, just be like, you did a different version of the power you had before, I get it.
Yeah.
So, Ageha's power is this very dangerous thing because it's this powerful blast that will like suck in all the psychic energy that surrounds it and grow even more powerful. And so, basically, he has the most dangerous power because he can't control it at first. You know, like it's like if anything that it touches will die, and he can't control it very well. So it's danger to himself, it's danger to his friends, and so on and so forth. And he has to learn to control that power. Sakurako. It's kind of weird. She has a katana, and she jacks into people's brains.
She's a trance specialist. Like, she's initially the premise of the series sort of played on the idea that everybody could essentially do the same, like, they could all use the same kind of psionics, and people were just more well versed of others. So she uses Enhance, and she, like, knows the principles of Blast, but her speciality was trance. And then, like, had specific techniques from there. Eventually, as the series got further along, it pushed her more as being, like, a trance specialist. And then there's, like, a whole added bit on I don't want to get into right now.
I know exactly what you're talking about, because that gets in spoiler territory.
But she is, like, a trance specialist. And all the... There's, like, essentially, like, a five-man band to a certain extent for the series. And they all have their own special abilities that are actually kind of interesting in the dynamic of how some of them work, because they're not all combat related. In fact, only a couple of them actually are.
Those three are the most combat related, and then they get their white mage, and then they get their scout, essentially.
Yeah. I just want to like kind of back up here and talk about the series at the beginning. It is, the premise itself sounds on the forefront, and as you read it, you're like, this is a lot like Gantz. It is, it's Gantz, but without the needless amount of bloodshed. But it, you know,
and fucking.
Yeah, there is no sexual activity? I'm trying to remember.
There's no sexual activity.
There's no sex.
I feel like there is, but it might just be...
Well, it's... They
at
say
the
that
there's
a kid.
A romance.
There's a kid at some point, but...
Yeah, it's implied that characters have had sex, but you'll never see it on screen.
You had to go to Dojin's fairs for that, right? but yeah, it has a similar kind of premise to that. But just to turn, separate everything from that. The first chapter of this series, I feel, is maybe one of the best first chapters of any series I've read. It's incredibly effective. And I mean, I have a slight bias to it because it's a premise that syncs well with me because I'm a big fan of Lost. And I like those kind of series that introduce big mysteries off the forefront, have you asking a lot of questions, and then end on this big cliffhanger. Because the first chapter is, a lot of detail about what Siren is, about this Nemesis Q, and it ends on the cliffhanger of him getting transported into Siren for the first time. But along the way, it also kind of tells us the story of who Agea is as a character, kind of showing the kind of nature he has, how he does things for other people, but at the same time, he's not blind. He's not an idiot hero. When he sees that one of the girls he's been helping has been bullying someone else, he, you know, flat out refuses to help her. You get a very good impression of who Agea is as a character, and when it has all this mystery attached to it, too, it's really effective at pulling me in. I got invested in immediately in the first volume. Almost all the way through, I thought was fantastic.
At first, there's not very much explanation as to what's going on, and I found it very intriguing, and I found the characters very likable, because, yeah, I really liked Ageha at first. I really liked Sakurako at first, because she kind of has... She's kind of hard to nail down. At times, she seems very cold. At times, she seems like she's just, you know, kind of broken and needs someone there to help her because she's been, you know, enduring a lot of weight by herself for a very long time. And at times she's really funny because she'll, like, someone will do something to piss her off, and so she'll kind of, like, do that yandere thing where she kind of, like, smiles while threatening their life and making her eyes really big. She's a really good character at first. And also, you know, Hiryu, he's really cool because he's like Chad, and I like Chad.
And essentially his relationship with Ageha is the two of them are in an unspoken dick measuring contest with one another. Throughout the entire series, they just exist to be like, neither of us are going to say we have feelings for her, but we're both going at this, right?
Oh, and also, like, they go through psychic training together when they're back in the real world, basically. And Hiryu takes to it much more easily than Ageha does. He's just takes on to the training much more effectively than Ageha does, and Ageha struggles more with it. And through the whole thing, he's like, I can't let him outdo me! He's just trying to basically idiot Shonen his way through, you know, use the power of your mind to bend reality. He's just like, oh! It's like, you're going through the entirely the wrong way.
It's so much better being able to see your reactions. There's a lot of comments about how effective your scary yandere face is. You'll need to use that more effectively to scare people.
I have really expressive eyes, I guess.
Oh, you have beautiful eyes, Nick. I enjoyed the first few volumes of the series immensely because it was very effective as a mystery, because it was one that slowly answered questions, but not at an alarming rate. It did it mostly just enough to kind of feed you along to progress things forward, but then ask its own questions as well, because very quickly we find out that the world they're going to isn't some, like, fantasy world or something like in a computer or whatever. It's their world. It's their planet, just in the future. And so the questions you had before about, like, where are they? What's happening? Now you have to ask, like, what happened in the past to cause this? Why are they here to this point? And there's a lot of questions like that I think help build the story. And what the mystery needs to do at that point is kind of exist to hook you in and then slowly develop the characters along with it through the circumstances that they've been thrust into. And I think for parts of it, it does that really well. The premise kind of having that fit of, like, a Gantz means that we're getting new characters brought into the group, many of whom, the first, like, two adventures they do, are kind of just fodder to be killed off.
Although, but it's not nearly as ruthless with them.
No,
like, there's some idiots in the group, but there's this great moment in the first mission that they go on where this group of idiots goes off and they get killed by one of the monsters in the world, and Ageha comes across one of them who has survived, but he's almost mortally wounded. And he's trying to protect the guy, and the guy is like, I made a stupid decision coming to this place, you know, hey, you know, take my card that landed me here and take it back to my mom and tell her what happened and stuff like that and remember my name and so on and so forth. Whereas Gantz would have just been like, well, there's that guy who was in a gang and he tried to torture that alien, so he got ripped apart. Whoop-de-doo, that's it, you know.
It's funny when you mentioned the note, because it's just reminding me about a recent episode of Walking Dead. It's a total off-topic tangent. But there's an episode where, like, a dude's got bit, and he's like, we need to get, you know, like, they're trying to get back to their base. And he's like, look, I'm probably not going to make it. Hey, Michonne, could you take this note to my wife and, like, give it to her? And she's like, no, we're going to make it. And I feel like, in the moment, I'd be like, look, I get your positive reinforcement. For the love of God, take this note. Please take this note. Not only that, he get like they all jump over a fence. He gets torn down and is getting ripped apart, ripped to shreds. And the entire time, like, the notes on the ground, Michonne's still just, like, not grabbing it. I'm like, what a huge bitch. You have a sword. You have a katana. At least mercy kill him. He's slowly being beaten to death. What are you doing? Sorry, this is off topic. Anyway.
What a bitch. Jesus.
It is. Like, I'm just the entire time, I'm like, please just take this note. I love your enthusiasm, but for the love of God. Were we on game? Oh,
basically,
no,
talking about how much more sympathetic the victims of Siren are to Gantz.
Yes, and it's not as graphic either. There is people being killed, but oftentimes you'll kind of cut away right before the savage blow, or it'll be in the background so you don't have to see it. Or
it's a shonen series as opposed to a seinen.
Yeah, so it's not nearly as graphic in that regard. But the premise still put that element in there, like, oh, new characters could be introduced, some of them will develop psionic powers. That honestly doesn't stay as much of a theme throughout it, because after they form their five-man band, it doesn't really change from there. Part of that's because about halfway through the series, the plot and the direction it goes kind of diverts completely off the original premise, for reasons we'll kind of get into once we get more into spoilers. But I think, overall, I still really enjoyed the beginning volumes of the series. I thought they did a really good job of setting up a cool shonen world, creating this mystery, and just kind of wanting to see where it goes from there. But not only so, you actually worked on this series. You kind of followed it much sooner than any of us did. What was it like following those early volumes and the premise for you?
Well, I really liked it start to finish. It was kind of a weird ride for working on it.
When you guys got it, was it a series that had, was it already completed in Japan? I don't know when you guys started translating it.
I started working on it in 2010.
Oh, so it would have been right around the time it was finishing then.
Yeah, so I think it was finishing up right when I was starting it. But my first introduction to the series was through Scanlations when it first started in Japan, and I actually stopped reading it because I thought it got really boring. But it turns out the Scanlations were just really bad. So when I got to that part in the Viz version, I was like, no, this is really exciting, and oh, I see what they're doing now, and oh, somebody just sucks at translating. So kids always go with the official release.
Cause... Yeah. I've read this series up until at least the third trip into Siren, through Scanlations way back in the day, like 2011 or something like that. Through this one, I actually picked up all the volumes. They had a bundle on it recently. I remember tweeting it out, so if you people didn't get it then, you have no one to blame but yourselves. But I picked up the bundle and read them all through the official releases there. And I got past the point I remember reading to there. And I don't remember why I stopped originally. It may have just been time or whatever reason. But it's actually not too far after I stopped reading that the series makes that big divergent. So I almost wonder if it was like in anticipation of that or not. But for you, what kind of hooked you into the series? What's your favorite parts of it?
Well,
is it all the cute boys? You can be honest with me.
Oh my goodness, the boys are so cute. No, there aren't really any cute boys in the series.
What, are you from New Jersey? Like, oh my god, the boys we had the other day. Oh, you should have seen what they were wearing in their little tuxedos. Oh my goodness, it's ridiculous. Anyway, how about those gents? They're doing awful, aren't they?
The reason I actually started reading the Scanlations and then why I took the job for this was because Iwashiro Sensei, his previous work, Mirohito, I think that's the name of it, I was really, really into. And so that was his first, this is his second. So I was like, oh man, that one was really cool, start to finish. So Siren has got to be good, right? And yeah, I don't know. I mean, I like the whole thing. I really like Ageha because he's, you guys have mentioned this, like, you know, he's an interesting character, and it's fun to see him grow throughout the series. I don't know. I don't have any good answers, you see.
He has... What I like about Ageha is... It's less about what he is necessarily, more about what the series does to him, is because it's a series where they start playing with the aspect of the fact that these are characters who are able to go from the future and see what happens there into the past, and are trying to then thus change the future. And if you're one of those people who have, like, issues with time travel, this series is going to fucking destroy your brain, because it's one of those series where it's like time isn't like a time isn't linear. It's like a fucking paint splatter against the wall.
Well, the point is explained as like, if you do something different in the past, then parts of the future are broken down and then restructured. But if you change it too much, then you'll destroy that future instead. And it's like, I think that you underestimate how much of the cosmos.
Yeah, like
it's affected by time.
It's like an element is that they'll go from the future, see something, change it in the past, and thus you're like, okay, so now the future is completely different. Then they'll go to the future again, things have changed, but then it's meant to imply that what they did last time when they were here still took place, but it just slightly changed because maybe some of their actions they wouldn't have done because elements have changed, but they still went there, but they don't remember it. It's weird kind of in that way.
Right. They go into a post-apocalyptic future whenever they time travel. And so, literally, there is a point where a character who would not have been alive at that time is now alive because of a change that occurred. And so, Geha meets them and is surprised that they're there. And they're like, oh, you reacted the exact same way the last time you were here. Which he doesn't remember because reality is different now.
Yeah.
And that is interesting, but it makes no sense.
It doesn't. But to the point I was trying to make, what I think works for the series in terms of Ageha is it places a lot of weight on him because he has to kind of deal with the fact that he puts all the responsibility on himself to kind of change these futures. And as situations crop up where they're basically going to have to leave the timeline or someone is going to be leaving them, he takes full responsibility. He places all the kind of weight on himself. And there actually comes a point where it seems like one timeline is completely fucked. And he doesn't, like, he just has to kind of accept that and go on and just have that weigh on him the entire way through. And it does make him an interesting character in that regard. And I do think that's what kind of helps keep him amusing, engaging as time goes on. And one other smaller aspect of the series is that it's one of the few that actually doesn't just kind of tease that there's a romantic relationship between the main characters. Like, it eventually flat out is stated and develops into a relationship between them. And by the end of it, they actually do get together. I see Nick already, like, frumpy frowning over there, like, love.
I really like that. I like that Ageha really does place all this responsibility on himself, even when it really isn't his fault, like, at all. Mm-hmm. But he really is kind of like the emotional heart, I guess. He's the reason. I like all the characters. Well, most of the characters.
I think that there are some characters in this that you'd be hard-pressed to find something actually really good about them.
Yeah, going through my screenshots from this series, it's like, this dick. Oh, this dick.
I'm just talking about the kids.
the kids, they get better.
No, they don't. They get worse.
I like the kids. It's almost like a separate topic, though. I feel like to talk about the kids...
I'm like representing Infamous in this. I hate children.
Always children. First and foremost, I forgot to mention this at the top of the episode. The outlay around our pictures and everything like that was actually made for us by Infamous Planet.
The pictures he chose.
I can't poop on him for anything. He did a tremendous amount of work in a very short amount of time. Like, I had a concept for how I wanted it to look. I just didn't have the time. He really pulled through and made that, so thank you to Infamous. I'm going to try to avoid using too many Infamous Planet voices throughout the start of this episode. But yeah, it's definitely...
He did a good job, because he noted a bunch of the stuff that we've bitched about recently, like Asta's starry eyes, and the whole Lucy in the bathtub with Randish thing, and Azon's weird expression, and Lily Barrow's owl thing. So yeah, all notable moments from recent WMR history, which means that we're going to be like, hey, man, can you, like, update this in, like, 4 months or so?
Yeah, I'm like, all right, can you get rid of the fairy tale thing? Let's go with something else.
No. I'm pretty sure that there's more recent fan service that you can throw in there instead. Anyhow. I don't know. I feel like I can't talk too much more about this series without going into the part where
things change.
Where I was like, no, it's ruined forever now. Because about 60 chapters or so in, so a bunch of stuff happens. A lot of stuff starts developing really quickly that changes the way that the series is and how a bunch of the characters are. And when that happened, I was just like, no, I can't do this anymore. I didn't drop the series. I finished it, but I was just, it was, you know, with a very different mindset from how the first roughly year or so of publication was, where I was really enjoying it through that time. I liked the characters. I liked the way they were developing. I liked the way the plot was unraveling. And things start moving very differently around that 60 chapter mark or so.
I know the point you're talking about, and I had a very similar kind of feeling where there is a point where the series changes. And my opinion of the series does alter a lot because of it. I think by the end of it, I kind of came back around to the point where I was like, this is still fun, this is still enjoyable, but I wasn't as engaged with it as I was early on. And a big reason for that, without getting into spoilers right now, is just the fact that the mystery itself gets essentially answered. And when that happens, it kind of took a lot of the interest out a little bit, because it hadn't done enough to develop the cast.
It did, too.
At the same
time,
it also took away a lot of the cast. Again, not to get too many spoilers yet, but a lot of things change around the same time, and it shifts the series a good deal. I feel like if it had maybe stayed with its initial premise of leaving Siren, coming back into it, and kind of trying to use, like, figure out new things while they're in there, while changing the past to kind of see how that affects the future, I think that could have been a really enjoyable way to keep at it with the series. But there is just this shift that happens, and by the end, I still enjoy the series. It's unfortunately a series that was canceled, and because of that, a lot of elements get introduced rather quickly at the end, kind of just to, like, I needed to do this. Yeah. You needed to see Nova. It doesn't really do a whole lot, but you needed to know Nova existed.
Those last 25 chapters or so were very obviously going to be, like, 200 or something like that originally.
But even with all that, I still found much of the series, like, parts of it throughout, even the last bits, to enjoy and keep engaged by. So I think, just to, like, you know, before we get into spoilers or anything like that, if this is something that sounds interesting to you, if you like time travel stories, if you like Shonen Jump series, if you like anything else by this mangaka, same person who did Kagami Gami, in case you enjoyed the first three chapters of that we got, definitely check it out. I don't know, next time it'll be on bundle, but you can always get the volumes themselves. At least check out the first couple. The first one alone, I highly recommend checking out, because I think it is an immensely good series for that first volume. I still say it has one of the best opening chapters that I've seen. And just kind of see how you go into it. But if time travel's not your thing, don't bother, because it's gonna bother you.
If time travel paradox bothers you, you're not going to want to read this.
But with that, spoiler warning from here on in, guys. Just note that, in case you don't want to be spoiled, if you want to check this series out on yourself. The point that we're talking about and kind of dancing around is, during a trip to Siren, they essentially have the Empire Strikes Back moment, where the villains have, looks like they've defeated our heroes. Asaga is, like, teleported into space just to drop down to Earth and presumably die.
Which is really fucking cool.
Obito is, like, blasted into a pit of death, essentially, to never return again. What's her name? Sakurako,
or Amamiya.
Yeah, Sakurako looks like she's about to get killed. Ageha's special ability did not work this time. He's going to get killed.
Everyone, his leg's been blown off.
Yeah, like, everyone looks like they're fucked, and then all of a sudden, the Elmore gang arrives, which are the five kids we've met in the past, who, prior to this, everyone, we came under the idea that they die when, basically, the villain group Wise reveals themselves.
Basically, they're these naturally psychic kids, who have been taken in by this elderly woman, and so, Amamiya's connections, they know about them.
Yes.
And so that's how she's gotten some of her psychic training, along with this one woman who is a veteran of the games, managed to escape. Basically, there are some people who have gotten psychic powers without actually going through the game. And so Ageha... Right. So Ageha learns about these kids and sees how, you know, how good they are, despite the fact that they're little kids, and he's like, I can learn a lot from them. And that's, you know, it's a great character moment, because he has no problem with bowing respectively to these, you know, 8-year-old kids and say, like, hey, you know, take me and teach me. And so he learns a lot from them. He learns how to control his very volatile powers. And then later on, it turns out that basically this organization bent on destroying the world, at a future time, the kids are going to confront them and they're going to die. Except because they've learned about this, Ageha and company have managed to take actions to prevent that confrontation from happening. So instead, the kids have made this resistance force, and they've all grown up and are now like 18 or something like that. And so they show up and they save the main gang.
Yeah, they come in for the rescue there.
And they're all ruined.
Well, no, here's the thing. I actually initially liked this because it's kind of cool seeing the kids there, and they are all super powerful. It's actually kind of weird because they make the rest of the characters look like jokes, and I'm like, okay, that works because they've had so long to train. Surely our main cast will now go back into the past, train to get to that level. But the thing is that this is really the big shift from the series because for about 3 or so volumes then, they don't go back, and the cast changed significantly because Asaga and Oboro are still MIA, and Kabuto, the other character we haven't talked much about, is basically injured to the point he can't do anything. So it's basically just Ageha and Sakurako teaming up with this Elmore gang to do things within Siren in the future, essentially. So at that point, the gimmick stops being going into the Siren world, traveling to the other phone, going back into the past and kind of learning things. They go on this mission regarding Nemesis Q, and then that's the point, it's in Volume 8, where everything gets explained. Essentially, every major question you would have had about the series, by and large, there's still a couple left, but essentially everything related to Siren, to Nemesis Q, to the mechanics of this game, everything is answered. And it's not necessarily done in an unsatisfying way. I mean, a lot of it makes sense. It just happens really early on for what the series was, essentially.
And it happens really quickly.
Yeah, and because of that, it takes a lot of the drama out of things, because you're not invested in what's going to happen next. You're not asking yourself questions anymore. You're now in the idea of like, okay, an antagonist is set up. We're hunting after him. There's no more questions asked. There's no more mystery left in this world. And it was a little bit annoying when it happened, especially because it all happens with half of the cast missing, and it's the half that really had a lot of interesting development going for them that kind of just gets dropped and never really brought up
again. And you got to substitute in these 5 new characters who originally were, you know, this minor group of kids, and so you can have very simple characters for them. So it's like Kyle is like Mini Ageha, Frederica is this kind of selfish girl, but she's, you know, basically just, you know, little tsundere. Marie is shy. Xiao is calm and more mature than the rest. And Van is weird.
And which is so weird because his gimmick as a kid is to be creepy.
Right.
He grows up and he's like, no, I'm wacky.
Yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, they grow up and it's basically just like slightly more mature versions of those single characteristics that they had before. Also, Marie has tits now and she wants to fuck Ageha. It's like, that's so creepy, because she's actually 8.
No, she's not! She's actually, like, a grown-up guy. She's older than them.
But then Ageha goes back in time.
Well, when she's 8, she just has a crush. She's not like...
When she's, like, 6 years old, she just has a crush on him. Yeah. And then when she's an adult, she wants to do him. It's totally acceptable.
No, it's not.
I don't ship it.
It's weird time travel stuff. It's weird. It's creepy.
Now, are you not shipping it because you don't think it has, you don't trust in that working out, or because you're like, I don't like this couple? Because
like
for me right now, I'm batting 100 on Kisamu, and I refuse to back another boat. No matter how likely it seems, I refuse to back another boat because I want to go undefeated on this.
Well, you already know they don't get together.
Yeah, the answer is clear here.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, at the time, maybe you didn't. Maybe you were like, I'm not backing a loser here.
And they
I was canon Perrin.
I mean, because after that point, I swear it's like Amamiya's whole thing becomes, I want Ageha, and also, by the way, there's a split personality inside me. It's revealed in the most sudden, jarring, no fanfare manner that I've ever seen. Like, there is a dangerous, dark personality dwelling inside my brain that I've pushed all my negative feelings onto.
It actually...
It just happens!
Well, here's the thing. To a certain extent, it makes sense, because we find out very early on the reason Sakurako wasn't this way at all when she was a child. She was a very positive, fun person when she was a child, but because of Siren, and it's something we didn't really talk about when we were referring to her, there was a point in time, basically, you graduate out of Siren. Like, when you get your phone card, there's a certain number of points on it. When the points run out to zero, you're out of the game. You don't have to play anymore, and you can't play anymore. So, when Sakurako got involved, she had a mentor, Mitsuri, I think is her name. So, Mitsuri guided her through, but there came a point when Mitsuri's card ran out, and Sakurako hadn't yet met Ageha, and during that time, she kind of had to fend for herself, and you presume nobody she went with survived. She suffers a lot of PTSD because of it, and she has a lot of dark emotions, and that's why she's become a lot more of a cold person she is now.
So, like, at first, when they meet her, she doesn't bother explaining anything to anyone, because she just figures they're not going to listen to me, they're going to go out and die like fools, and I'm going to be left alone, I'm going to be the one to survive again. So she's just given up on trying to protect people, and through her relationship with Ageha, that slowly starts to change, and she starts to regain some of her older personality, because he shows her that they can actually make a difference by trying to help people. So,
notion then, essentially I extrapolated to that all that PTSD, all those horrifying memories she has, she's trying to suppress them and not let them control her. And is somewhat weird because it's not a mechanic that's... It's not like they explain it like, oh, because of your psionics you've developed it. It's quite literally another personality develops to the point it actually becomes a second physical representation of herself that changes her skin tone. And
for some reason, whenever it takes over, she has darker skin so that you can tell that this is Abyss instead of Sakurako. And she's just... And she is just like, you know... very dangerous. She doesn't really care about other people. The only reason she doesn't actually kill anyone is because Ageha would be mad at her, and she's completely open about her feelings for Ageha instead. And I really hated that whole thing. One of the main reasons I don't like the second half of the series is because I really did not like the direction that Amiya's character took. That I did not like that whole thing. And I did not like that her main thing in the series just seemed to be her relationship to Ageha. You know, I like the, you know, romance between them, but it seemed like she lost a lot of the stuff in the first half of the series that I liked so much about her. You know, like the ability to, you know, bring, you know, a lighthearted tone with her weird creepiness when she was threatening people over stuff.
The puppets.
And her seriousness at certain times as well. Seems like a much more complex character at first, and then she becomes much more simple, which is, I love Ageha, there's a dark tone version of myself inside my head.
Well, I think part of what also the issue is she loses one of her main kind of, like, unique advantages, which stops being the mentor to the group, because now they're with the Elmore gang, all those kids are far more experienced than she is, and there's not really that need for her to be a guide to these characters anymore, you know? It stops being about the game of Siren, so all of her experience kind of falls away, and it does kind of leave her with less things to do. I didn't necessarily... You have a point, though?
Oh, yeah, you mentioned she loses that experience advantage. The whole reason that Abyss kind of starts to emerge is because her memories start getting erased, and then... they stop getting...
Oh, that is right. That didn't really ever get brought up again, did it?
Like, that's what starts to happen is they encounter this person in the future who has this very special psychic ability that basically she tries to use her typical mind jack ability on him to read his thoughts and stuff, and he turns it back on her, and her memories start to deteriorate, and she starts to freak out about it because she's like, you know, I have all these negative experiences that I would like to forget, but I'm starting to forget the positive ones. I'm starting to forget my experiences with Ageha and stuff like that. I'm starting to forget my experiences with Mitsuri. And Ageha comforts her, and it's never brought up again.
Yeah, I did completely forget that was like a big element at one point that doesn't really get addressed after the first time, where he's just like...
I imagine part of it is because it had to... memories. I imagine a part of it has to do with it had to kind of rush towards the finish. There are clearly a bunch of plot threads that got dropped and then never got picked up again. Because things had to just wrap up very quickly. That seems like a big reason why Hiryu doesn't really get to do very much towards the end, why Oboro gets brought back and doesn't do very much, and stuff like that. But still, it was just one of those things where it's like, there's this big reason for why Abyss kind of gets triggered, and then it's never picked up again. And also, Abyss doesn't seem like that big a deal, honestly.
The one that bothered me the most was Oboro, because that was a character who was very interesting to me. There was something strange about him. We knew a little bit about him. He was an actor, we knew he was very popular. We know he was slightly interested in Siren, that's why he agreed to do like a television program about it. And when he gets into the world, he just has this strange quality to him where it almost
this is
seems
interesting.
Like he seems happy with the danger this world provides and intrigued by not like he shows no fear, very strange kind of personality to have. And they even note at one point, I think Asaga is with him and I can't remember the exact...
Kabuto, I think, was.
Maybe it's Kabuto. Someone's with him, I can't remember the exact, phrasing here, so this is paraphrasing. But essentially, Oboro says something like, oh, we don't want to keep fighting this guy anymore. I definitely don't want to be involved, I definitely don't want to keep going like this. And whoever he's with is like, you're lying. Why are you lying? I definitely feel like you're not telling the truth about that statement. It's just like this intriguing kind of thing, there's something dark about this character.
Right.
Something unexplained.
There's this really creepy moment where they encounter one of the monsters, and Oboro recognizes that it's kind of an amalgam of a bunch of different corpses, basically, with a single core. And he has a healing ability, so he thinks to himself, if I use my healing power, then that might cause the healing bodies to, the various bodies to regenerate, and that would cause the single, collective that they're a part of to break down because of that. And so, that's what he says after he's used it, he's defeated this thing. And so Kabuto just thinks to himself, you didn't think that, you just did it because you wanted to see what happened.
Yeah, that's it. And he's just like this creepy attitude, which made him really interesting. But then he gets blasted into that hole, and you essentially don't see him again until, the second to last volume, and that personality, why he is the way he is, just still never gets explained.
He just suddenly comes out and he's like, I use my power in order to become super awesome powerful.
Yeah.
And I will be the strongest there is.
It just gets creepier
because but all of the intriguing stuff kind of gets peeled away in order to be like, this is what the character was underneath, I guess.
It's just disappointing because the mystery behind that character never gets explained. Even at the end of the series, they're noting, everybody's returned to their lives or some variation of it, and you see him, walking down a hallway, and you're like, what, did he just become an actor again?
Is he gonna be Dexter or something like that?
This dude was such a weirdo. What is he doing?
Nope, happy ending.
Which is
I thought he was gonna be a villain eventually at some point.
Yeah, because
that's what I thought too.
You do get a tease at one point, basically before they go back after the big shift in the story. They do go back to the past eventually. You do get a glimpse of where he is. You see him kind of getting out of the hole, and a monster attacks him. He's like, "Oh, what are you?" And he uses his power, but his power has changed now. Instead of healing something, it's just tearing them apart, and he just liquefies this monster. And you're like, oh, holy shit, this is kind of crazy. Can't wait to see what this does. And you're seven volumes later, and oh, there he is, credits.
And
really nothing to get invested on at that point, unfortunately.
And they also have this thing where he seems to be very interested by Ageha in particular. So it would seem like if he's,
there's a lot of Hoge in this series.
Oh, yeah.
If you're into dudes...
He heals people by hugging them. And so when he discovers his power, he just, is hugging Ageha and healing him and stuff like that. And he makes it explicitly clear. It's like, I'm not saving you because it's the right thing to do. I'm just hugging you because I want to hug you.
There is a lot of...
I love him. He's so weird and creepy and great. But
and then he becomes Super Devil or something, and that's it.
Yeah, it is disappointing that they didn't get to go into his character much more. But that's what happens when you get canceled.
There was also Grenar and the main villain as well, who definitely had a suggestive relationship hidden underneath the subtext there.
You've taken out my eye. I shall follow you now.
Yeah. It's just if this world's going to go out, we're going out together. All they needed to do was basically turn into half-naked energy forms and spiral towards the Earth together with a big light that saves it for it to take out the rest of the subtext. But I still enjoyed a lot of these characters, a lot of the stuff that's going on. I don't want to, like, diverge ourselves too far off the topic at hand. But I enjoyed parts of Siren a lot. I think my issue with it just became that once the mystery was solved, I lost a lot of my ability to care because the mystery, I don't care about the answers. I watched Lost, I played Life is Strange. I had the same thoughts on both of those where a lot of things are left unanswered, but I don't need everything answered. I think actually good mysteries should leave things unanswered because at the end of the day, those are just storytelling methods to tell you something about characters. And I feel the same way about this mystery here. They could have left a lot of the stuff be more mysterious and not really have an exact explanation. Because what would have mattered to me is how the framework of this mystery enhanced the characters. And for the first few volumes, it did. But it doesn't necessarily do enough of that. And especially because, you know, 3/5 of the cast kind of get left behind once that big reveal happens. And a lot more of the series becomes about the side character, the Elmore gang, and all the various people they also meet in the past who are Psionists. It seriously, like, weirds me out. They meet more Psionists outside of Siren than they do in Siren.
Because most of the groups that they encounter when they go into Siren die. So it's literally, like, just the five of them and then Matsuri, I think.
Yeah.
Well, there's one other survivor, I guess.
Yeah.
He shows up later on, but...
Man. Oh, also, this is just one thing I want to quickly note. In reading the volumes, there is the Candyman Psionist. The guy basically who injects himself with diseases and then he distributes them through dust.
That guy.
The mangaka notes in writing the manga, he's like, I considered giving the Candyman Psionist, I've forgotten his name at this point, unfortunately, but I considered giving them a sympathetic ending, but I thought it would detract too much from his murderous deeds. And I was like, that's great, except you gave a sympathetic ending to the actual serial killer in the series. Like, there's a dude who fucking murders people, and he gets a sympathetic ending because he fell in love with Mari, and I'm like, it's literally...
so creepy.
It's almost literally like you gave a sympathetic death scene to Sander Cohen from Bioshock. They're essentially dude.
Just like if
less gay.
It's like if you gave a sympathetic ending to a pedophile who didn't get to rape the girl that he was currently obsessed with.
It's so strange.
The way I see it, I'm not completely excusing it, but a lot of the bad guys, even though they were terrible, terrible people, a lot of them had sort of reasons to do what they did, and the Candyman was just like, whoop, I'm evil.
To be fair, though, that
is true.
To be fair, though, this dude was legitimately a serial killer.
He was literally like, I'm going to reach inside you.
He put people in plaster and cut their throats.
I didn't say it made him a nice guy. I just said that most of them had backstory, you know?
So I think for the others, yes, but this dude was fucked up and he got a sympathetic ending, which is jacked up.
I don't know, man. I hate the Candyman the worst, so...
Oh, the series had less sympathy for that one other guy who managed to survive the first mission, but then tried to tell people about Siren, which means he got killed by Nemesis Q. And all he wanted was money.
Yeah.
He didn't actually murder anyone. He just kind of, like, trailed behind them while they were taking care of all the dangerous stuff. And was like, well, I made it through, too. See you guys later. Goes to tell people about it. No! It's like, fuck that guy, he tried to tell people.
Fuck old dude who wanted money. Oh, which reminds me of old man from Gantz. I'm sad all over again now.
He didn't get his peanuts, Nick.
I
will say 100%, this series is far superior to Gantz, and Gantz got the ending it wanted. Okay? Ugh, fuck Gantz with a 10-foot ball. Yeah, I mean, this series really disappointed me from about a little bit before midway through to the end. It became a very different series than what I had grown to enjoy from the part before that. I really didn't care too much for the villains, and actually that's like around the time that the actual villains started really getting introduced, but I didn't really find any of them very intriguing. There's weird time travel stuff, but that hasn't bothered me too much. It's just a matter of, like, a lot of the characters that I like disappear, and the characters that stick around, except for Ageha, either get worse or they weren't very interesting to begin with, I think. So, I mean, I would say that, you know, you can have different interpretations of how those things kind of go. But in general, I like the aesthetic of the series. I like the main gimmick of the series. It just kind of goes in a direction that I don't agree with by the end of it.
Fair enough. Before I get my thoughts, I want to hear Annalisa's thoughts on this series. You lettered for it, so obviously I assume you want to recommend it, because then you get that sweet money, I assume. Royalties, right?
Oh, yeah, royalties. The letter of life. The sweet, sweet royalties, yeah.
I get royalties from Kickassia. I don't.
No, I totally recommend it. I mean, it does have its weak points. I think it...
A halfpenny of every sale of Kickassia goes to me.
That would be great, wouldn't it, though?
Sorry.
No, but yeah, I recommend it. I really enjoyed it, start to finish. It does have its weak points. Like, see, I kind of liked when the story turned a bit. I thought it was an interesting change. And I didn't think it answered all the questions. I thought it just kind of gave you the beginnings of the answers, and more of it was revealed as time went on. But I could see how a lot of people may not like that part. But it definitely has its weak points. But I thought the beginning was super strong. I thought the final fight was really badass. All the Black Nova stuff was just so cool to me. So, yeah, I mean, I completely recommend it. It's probably one of my favorite series I've worked on. I give it 2 thumbs up.
High recommendation from Annalisa.
High recommendation. It's not World Trigger, but it's really good.
Yeah, no, I'm not writing smutty fan fiction about Siren yet.
What?
Yet.
I'm prepared.
I'm pretty sure that already exists without Chris's help, so it doesn't...
I can make it better.
I'm going to go searching later.
I revolutionized one genre. I'm going to revolutionize them all. I still...
Might be hard-pressed to find a way to do that with certain fandoms.
I'll go back in time, Nick.
All the millions of Naruto fanfics out there.
I'll be like Brennan, where I'm a big shit in the Naruto God of War crossover community. Which I love is a thing. To the point, though, I enjoyed the early parts of Siren a lot. I lost a bit of my interest in it towards the middle, but I still think the series does a lot of things great. One thing we never really talk about was I think the series actually has really good action to it and some really interesting uses of powers. Like, I love the way they take Agia's ability, the Malzez's door, however you pronounce it, and he basically finds new ways to utilize it. You know, sometimes it's a lance, and other times it's like a spinning dome around him, and then he makes like discuses. I guess it's just discs. I don't know why I'm trying to make them harder word out of it.
You can do... It would be discuses.
Discuses. It's too complicated. Plus, it's too close. Plus, it sounds like too much like I'm like Sylvester the cat trying to fucking...
Discuses.
Yeah, I'm like trying to talk about like a gay porno. I was like, there were so many discuses over there.
Why is he Snagglepuss?
I'm all kinds of different cartoon cats now, don't you know?
Fucking happy fun.
But I thought they did have really interesting action. I liked the elements that the kids brought into it, honestly. I thought they kind of added something unique to the series that I would have kind of liked to see more, because they were kind of this crux in both timelines. Someone they wanted to protect in the past, but someone who actually is better than them and stronger than them in the future. It kind of created this unique parallel. Like, maybe they have to keep going in the past to prevent something horrible from happening to them in the future. Something like that. I thought it was kind of cool.
Trunks type of thing.
Yeah, and I enjoyed much of the series in that regard. I don't love it. It's not a series that I'm like, yo, once a year I'm going to pick up Siren again and reread it, because I think it's great. But I know a lot of people love this series. Annalisa obviously does. Infamous Planet, I know, is a big fan of it. He's like, oh, I love it. They're children, Dan. They get hurt. But it's... And I know a lot of people recommend the series because they like it. So... Even if maybe some of the stuff we're saying doesn't seem like it's going to be super interesting, I think you may still find you'll enjoy it more than necessarily we did. I am someone who's particular about the mystery of things. When it disappeared, I wasn't as engaged, but I don't think that necessarily means that the series was wrong for doing it. You know, it's a matter of preference, I suppose, in that regard. So I would recommend the series at least to try out the first couple chapters, buy the first volume, read the first little kind of arc, their first trip to Siren. assignment, see how you feel about it, and then kind of go from there. But I don't think this is the best series I've ever read, and I certainly can see maybe... I don't think I see why it got canceled, but I can see why people weren't as engaged with it as maybe they were some other things. But I do think the series deserved to get a longer run than it did. So, yeah, that's my thoughts on Siren.
Okay. Well, that is going to do it for that.
Wait, one more thing, if you don't mind me adding this. This is kind of only tangentially related.
That's the best kind of thing.
We used our one tangent on Walking Dead earlier. You get no more. You took it. I'm like, well, go ahead.
I'm reminded of this because because I lettered this series, I made a lot of errors. And people have been finding those errors.
I counted all of them. 200.
Damn. But if people do find errors in books, tell the company so they don't keep getting printed. Because, like, I know if people have come to me and been like, is this page supposed to look like this? Well, I'm usually Siren, actually. And no, it's not. I mean, if it's a mistake, it's a mistake. And it's pretty clear that there were a lot of mistakes. And I'm really embarrassed when that happens. But I appreciate when people tell me that because that means that I can send a new file. So if the book gets reprinted, it'll get reprinted right. So the digital version gets updated. So if anybody's reading a book, it doesn't matter who the publisher is, you find a mistake, email them and let them know so it can get fixed in the future because... I feel really bad with all the mistakes I let get through.
Are you crying?
No, I'm just really embarrassed.
Oh, I was like, don't cry. I misspell things all the time.
But I don't like I know, like, three or four people have come forward and been like...
I can't hide my eye rolls as easily now.
I know, I'm like, hey! Hey!
Like, three or four people have come forward, and I'm like, oh, no, you know. And they're like, I'm sorry, I'll take down, you know. Like, everybody who does this is like, I'll take down my tweets about it. I'm like, no, it's okay. It is a mistake. I need to know about these things.
So
especially if it's my book, you can tweet me directly, Kaito_Ace, and I can fix it real fast.
So if I'm reading the next volume of World Trigger, and I'm like, hold on, Osamu's name is spelled wrong, which I can't imagine you'd ever do, but basically what I should
do like
is...
That's like an autofill setting on her keyboard.
She tries to type in, like, opposite, and it just autofills to Osamu already. You're like, that's weird. That was only O. How did you... you use no word with O in it more than Osamu? But if I see one, I should send a message directly to Mr. Jump himself, and he's like, yarr, we'll get Annalisa on there to correct it right away. Yarr.
Yes, right. Indeed.
Very good. Excellent.
That's my tangent. Do-do-do-do-do-do, done.
Okay, so...
Is that your power read down? You're like, boom.
Tangent over. That does it for Siren, then. So let us move on to the recap portion of Weekly Manga Recap. Let's start things off with Black Clover.
Black Clover!
Page 41.
Are you going to talk about Black Clover? I still wish you were, Chris. Let's talk about it.
Shut up, Aston. Okay. So, last time, children were Pied Pipered away, and Gaush and Sister What's-Her-Name and Asta went off on broomsticks to go save them. Asta taking the strangest broomstick mount I've ever seen. Why are you doing
that? Well, I'm here to be a soon.
Why do you still have those?
I keep everything precious to me.
Noelle's not in this chapter because she stayed behind for some reason. They find the case. Why are you... Stop that!
Oh, very man, this is so great. It's going to be so distracting now.
I just see, like, something creeping up onto your screen. Like, what is that? God damn it!
You're like, what's happening? What's coming up? Oh, maybe he's going down.
Something stupid again. So they spot Rebecca's little brother, Marco, outside of the cave where the children have been kidnapped. And Gosh is like, I don't give a fuck. It's not Marie. He just flies straight into the cave while Asta drops down. And I like the detail that, you know, Asta lands in the snow and is still moving. So by the time that he comes up to Marco, he's got this giant snowball surrounding him.
It's so
I wish that there were a bigger a panel of him, like, because, you know, the next time that he shows up after that one, he's already, like, got the snow crumbling off of him. I wish that he had, like, kept it on for a little bit longer, because it's... I actually missed the joke the first time I read through it. So.
It's like a Kirby power-up that's just Snow Asta.
So, the nun and Asta go to tend to the kid, and the nun observes, oh, you know, he must be under some sort of spell. So Asta, using his brain for once, takes out his cleaver and just goes, dunk, and hits him with the handguard, and Marco snaps out of it. And the nun uses flame recovery magic and summons all these candles in order to heal his scrapes and bruises and such. Then Asta says that they've got to go in and save the other kids, and Marco's like, no, I'm scared, you've got to stay with me, don't leave me here. And so Asta gives him his black bull's robe and says, if you wear this, you're going to be fine. It's got magic and knight courage in it. It's a nice, sweet little moment. Although he kind of ruins it a little bit by saying, I'm just loaning this to you, you have to give it back later. It's still Asta. Inside the cave, the villains are extracting magic from the children, and, of course, Gaush comes rushing in, shouting for his sister Marie, and he sees that she has a small bruise on her cheek, so he starts freaking out and launching lasers from his mirrors and such in order to attack the mages. What's her name? The girly.
Girly?
The effeminate mage uses snow magic.
Oh, this is where Annalisa needs to come in. You need to know the characters here if we don't.
Let me see what it is in Japanese. I don't remember. I mean, it's Neige
in weird English. Name.
No, I'm checking the Japanese right now.
It is a weird name, so I don't know how you could come up with that one.
It is Neiju.
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 Yeah, okay.
Neiju.
This series has such weird names. She tries to, you know, attack him with ice powers, and he just deflects, Gauss just deflects them with mirrors, tries to summon a bunch of snowmen, which are called snow friends, because obsessed with friendship type of thing, and Gauss just summons a giant barrage of lasers and destroys them all immediately, and Gauss announces, it's time for a massacre! He's kind of scary, and the two of them are freaking out. They're like, what are we gonna do? What are we gonna do? And of course, that's when Asta and the nun come bursting in as well. The ugly glasses dude observes that Asta has no magic, and so he's like, I'll take you on myself. And Asta just comes in and hits him with his sword, and that's where the chapter ends.
Yay.
I don't think this fight's gonna last very long. I got a small.
You don't think these guys are gonna rival the Wizard King?
No, I don't think so. No, unless like. Five, you know, new, much better guys suddenly emerge. I think that this story arc is going to be pretty short.
The children turn out to be evil, Nick.
That might be... That's probably... I imagine something along those lines might happen. Although with Gaush there, I don't think it's going to be too effective a strategy. What if Asta and Gaush have to fight because of that?
What, Nick, should I make this like a new segment? It's Rollo T Stone Cold Lock of the Century of the Week. I want to hear Annalisa's thoughts on this, because you are a big fan of Black Clover. You letterer for the series. You sent me these delightful cards to note that I believe, what is it the bird says specifically? Heard you were talking shit. So I want to hear your thoughts, not just on this chapter, but on Black Clover as a whole, because I think people out there don't necessarily give the series as much of a chance as they should.
Yeah, so it's clearly no secret I'm a huge Black Clover fan. A lot of people hate on it, and I think
you're, I blame all of you.
Y'all suck.
I was waiting for it back, and it's your fault, Rollo T. And I'm like, no!
We've been more positive on Black Clover the last month.
No, but I think the charm of Black Clover is that it's just so pure shonen. Like, it doesn't try to hide that. Look at all these tropes it's using. Look at all of them. It's just trope-tastic. But they're used so well. And a lot of the arguments I've heard that people are like, oh, this series sucks because it's copying One Piece because Asta has dreams. Guys.
That's ridiculous.
That's ridiculous. That's basic.
Oh, Goku, that complete ripoff of Luffy.
So, like, oh, it copies Bleach because he's got a big sword. Guys! It's a big sword! Oh, it copies Zatch Bell because they use Grimoire. Grimoire had been a thing for thousands of years!
Well, maybe not thousands.
I do hear the comparisons. Just about every week someone seems to have something new that they think the series is ripping off, which maybe it was like once or twice we've used as a joke of the, maybe like something they've done, but I don't think
it's totally Sasuke.
But it's just the notion, I'm like, I don't actually feel like this series really rips off anything.
Yes, they have the saying, everything's been done, you know, whatever you do, you're copying somebody. It's just how you...
Everything's derivative.
Rehash. Yeah, you know, it's how you rehash the ideas, and Black Clover is not new and exciting and stuff, but it's solid fun, and I think it's a solid shonen series. I mean, if people don't like it, people don't like it. But what bothers me is that a lot of people seemingly don't like it because they think it's copying other series. And it makes me almost think, like, guys, read other series. Every series copies other series in that case.
I do think that, everyone is entitled to their own opinion and stuff. But, yeah, I mean, sometimes your argument defending your opinion is stupid. It just is.
But, yeah, I mean, I have no problems if you... genuinely just, it's not the series for you. Hey, it's not the series for you. That's, I don't care about that, you know, that's your opinion. Not everybody's gonna like the series. You know, it's not a perfect series. But it's just the comments I've heard on why people don't like it is just ridiculous. It's like...
It's not specific enough for it to be ripping anything off.
Yeah, and like, yeah, just some of the things like, oh yeah, you know, they can't have, you know, oh look, here's magic, and here's this, and it's like, well, if you use those, and you say it's a bad series because it has these tropes, One Piece is a terrible series, because it has all those tropes, too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a terrible series.
And we all know One Piece is amazing, right? It's, come on.
Mm-hmm. If you get into, like, that group of characters in Fairy Tail looks suspiciously like that group of characters in One Piece. Also, that one, you know, fist-raising thing, if it keeps on happening and you can just point to a bunch of specific instances, then it gets more suspicious, but...
Yeah.
I think we can all agree, though, that hand-raising scene was totally taken from Alabasta, right? Let's all just admit that.
I mean, it's yeah.
I feel like if Hero was here, he'd be in his box right now. Would it be, like, giant fake breasts around the room? But he'd also be like, yeah, guys, I really kind of did. It was a great scene.
But yeah, I mean, Black Clover is a bunch of things you can be like, oh, you know, this character reminds me of this character and so on and so forth. But yeah, it's not specific enough for you to say, oh, it rips off this. I mean, you could say it's similar to this series, and I think that series did it better, but I think that is a little bit too dismissive to say, oh, it rips off this, and therefore it's not good. Rip-offs can be good too, by the way.
Yeah.
This is true. This is very true.
And I will say, I think that Black Clover has been better, especially in the most recent month. I've enjoyed it a lot more.
I'm so happy.
It's unfortunate. This is the one chapter this week I was kind of just met on. But
it's not particularly.
It was like, oh, we're going to have Annalisa on, like, after a month of loving the series. It was my chapter of the week, like, 2 weeks ago. And then this one came around, I was like, this one's okay. It's not a bad
this
chapter.
One, there were from, I mean, I at least enjoy every chapter, but from the Mixer chapter up until this one, the chapters have been so good.
That Mixer chapter was the most pleasantly, wonderfully surprising thing.
I was so prepared for it to just be like, okay, well, here comes a filler chapter. And, like, it kind of is, but it's so funny.
It was great. And that's, you know what, even this, like, even though I'm not crazy about this, I can recognize what this chapter is like a short... This, I don't know if this is necessarily the climax. I feel like something's going to happen from the magic they stole from these kids. But I recognize this is like a short arc to kind of give us more detail about who Gouch is and to just continue to reveal to us the different members of the Black Bulls give us the details about them and slowly develop them. So I can definitely enjoy it for that regard, and I think I like what this arc is essentially giving us.
Mm. So, okay.
Yeah, there we go. Move on to our other favorite series, Nick. Guess who's back? Guess who's back, Nick?
Bleach 654, Dead Man Standing. You done it now! Anyway, so, Lilliburrow's been defeated, mostly. He exploded
into... He's super dead, Nick. He blew up into feathers. How could he be alive?
He exploded into feathers. Nanao,
so the last four chapters of this series have been about Nanao showing off her super awesome god-destroying power.
And the ability to kill gods, yes, and... Lilliburrow has exploded into feathers which fall from the platform that they're gathered on and stuff. Nanao immediately, her feet almost give out from under her, and Shunsui catches her and congratulates her on a job well done. Then he turns around and says, okay, let's go catch up to the others. Oh, shit.
See, now this might have been super cheesy, but I think I would have enjoyed it more if then she caught him when he fell. Like,
that would have been cute.
It'd been sort of cheesy, like, oh, she recovered from her, like, supposedly so much trauma that she couldn't even stand enough to catch it. But I was like, that would have been so cute if they caught each other then. Like,
can you imagine? But Shunsui's, like, twice as big as Nanao, though.
All their fucking magic ghosts.
I got you. Blah!
They are magic samurai ghosts. I don't need to apply logic to it at that point.
Bleach doesn't have any logic, guys.
Yeah. I'm still not sure how any aspect of the Soul Society works.
So
why do ghosts need to eat?
It seems as though Shunsui is down for the count, but alive, for now. Meanwhile, rather than continuing on with that thread, or cutting over to the other group of Soul Reapers, or cutting over to Ichigo and company, we cut down to below.
That's such
to
a
Soul
great...
Society.
Like, we cut down. You're already like, why?
To where Lilliburrow's remains are showering down on Soul Society, and Aizen's down there. This is where Aizen is, I guess. He just didn't go up with them.
Is this the first time we've seen Aizen in like 3 months, too?
Since, what's his name? The, that one guy, I think it was Nananajikoop, right? Who pinned him down, I think it was?
Something like that, yeah. He had some ability to do that.
And disabled him briefly, and so Aizen is, you know, still inside, apparently did not go up with the captain's group despite being their super awesome secret weapon thing.
Like, just leave him down there, I'll be fine.
Yeah, he's just kind of like, yeah, we can leave the guy who can manipulate anyone. And he's, you know, just sitting down there in his chair and he's just like, what's going on outside? So, a bunch of people come outside, see that the rain has stopped essentially, and something starts to emerge from the wreckage. And a guy is like, huh, what's that glowing thing? Blah, his head's blown off.
I love these moments. It's just like, if you aren't a seated member of the Serite, of the Gotai 13, just don't exist, because this shit just gets bad feeling. This
you
dude's like,
to die.
What is happening over there? Oh, shit! Just his face explodes off.
So Lilliburrow emerges, and his body, I guess, reforms itself, and he is now a flamingo, basically. He's got long legs, and he's still got that weird spherical kind of owl head, and he's just like, ow, 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 ow. Oh no, my halo's gone! Oh shit, I fell from heaven, lost my halo, I'm the sinful one now. And then he starts freaking out.
He needs a voice, Nick. This character definitely needs a voice of some kind.
He's too far removed from the sniper for me to do.
Let's,
sniper.
Let's, you can be Jerry Lewis.
I don't know how to do Jerry Lewis.
Well, I'd be like, hi, the pain is excruciating! My halo's gone, and I'm the sinful one now!
And so he screams out that he's going to make Shunsui pay for
this. Are y'all gonna pay for this, Shunsui? Oh, are you gonna pay for this? Well,
he says a great line, which is, you'll pay for this even if you're dead.
My halo's gone. I may have lost God's power. I'm a chicken. But you know what? Those kids need your money. They're not going to walk. They're never going to walk again. I have weird flamingo legs and can fly, Lahaven. But those children can never walk. Donate your money, please. Lahaven.
And for some reason, I guess he's a starfish, because more copies of himself also start to emerge from his feather remains, and he says that he's going to basically just destroy all of Soul Society because Shunsui was trying to protect it, and so that's how he's going to make Shunsui pay. Except then one of his heads gets cut off and then explodes, because, remember, his body is like pure energy at this point. And who should it be but the formerly thought just as dead and never coming back as Unohana, Kira Izuru. Remember, he had his, like, a hole blown in his chest in, like, the first, or I can't remember if it was the first or the second invasion of the Vandenreich. And apparently this problem has been addressed by tying his body together with occasional metal strands to make sure it doesn't rip itself apart, I guess.
That just seems like a bad idea.
That thing's going to get infected. I know that you might say, oh, yeah, we made sure that it's scarred over completely, but no, you're going to have to, like, apply a lubricant, and that's a really awkward place for your arm to have to reach around. You're going to need to have someone help you out with that. Give him a fucking actual, like, prosthetic to fit in there, at least. Oh. But yeah, he's apparently perfectly fine. He just has a hole in his chest. And remember, they're totally just like humans, which is why he can breathe just fine.
You only need one lung.
You totally only need one lung in order to do vigorous activities like fighting. He complains that his new hole aches. So the Lilibaros are like, who are you?
Ivan, who's that over there with the people?
And Izuru says,
with the sword that cuts us and makes us weigh more, but we're made of energy, so we don't have a weight and a mass. Ivan, this is silliness.
Well, technically, I guess they're made of reishi, and everything in Soul Society is also made of reishi.
So it's,
I guess,
essentially like cutting the same thing?
Yeah, but he is combustible sometimes.
Oh, what a terrible thing to be at this moment.
So Izuru says that he is a dead man. Well, no, I don't know. You don't look very zombie-ish. I've seen zombies in Bleach, and you are not a Bleach zombie.
Yeah, they get darker skin, and Giselle makes out with them a little bit, I think. That's how I identify zombies in this universe.
And Izuru is just like, oh, I'm back from the dead. But, oh, look at my surroundings. Can I really protect this place? We'll see. Okay, then. So, welcome back, Izuru, I guess. Wait, yeah, you go and beat that guy Shinsui and Nana already defeated.
The long-awaited return of Izuru, Nick.
It's a better return than Grimmjowse. I'll give him that.
Were you excited to see him back?
No. Who cares about Izuru?
Well, Nick,
there are fans of Izuru, but...
But we needed the answers. And of course, to read the answers, just read 13 Blades.
Kubo and the end of Jump notes specifically says, to find out how Kira became this way, just read my 13 Blades backstory thing. And really, like, he shows up in like three panels and you see him being operated on, $6 million man style. It's not even worth checking out. Way to shill, Kubo.
It's literally like, we have the technology, but it's Uzuru, so I don't know, just staple like some big things between them and roll with it. He's fine.
It's like,
he doesn't even have a Bankai.
Mayuri's division has the power to literally create an artificial soul with an artificial body, and they can't regrow this much.
Well, then, like, I don't understand why someone can't just reishi heal it up. Because, I mean, the same thing essentially happened to Matsumoto during the fake Karakura Town arc. That Chimera, like, ripped out half of her torso.
Yeah, and they did the whole thing where, like, Soifun's arm got chopped off because it was affected by Baragon's powers, and to prevent from spraying to her whole body, Oeda chopped it off. And they specifically say Orihime did not heal that. The medical division healed it. So yeah, they have the technology!
They just don't care about it.
It's Kira!
Yeah, like, on user, come on. Like,
he'll be fine with this patchwork, you know.
We'll get to him later.
Maybe there's some sort of super awesome enhancement that Mayuri's group did to him to fuck around with.
He can dodge better now.
Yeah, he weighs less.
He's got less. There's less of a hitbox.
Yeah, he can He can also put keys around it, so he can have his keys on him at all times. He can hang a coat from it. Like, if he doesn't want to, like, go to the rack, he can just hang it on his torso for a little bit. It's pretty handy. There's a lot of applications to this, Nick.
So, we finally cut back over to the third member of the four elite guards. Gerard Valkyrie is getting his ass kicked by Renji and Byakuya. And Renji says, what the fuck were you thinking? Did you really think you could take us all on by yourself? You know, the two of us can handle you just fine. And Gerard says...
Nick, he needs a voice. He stone cold? I feel like he was stone
cold. No. Mineta is stone cold, remember.
Mineta is stone cold. Gerard needs a voice.
I've got to do some really weird lines as stone cold.
Let's see.
You could do it. Just do him as Thor.
What's Thor's voice, really?
You just talk like this.
You know. That's like
Thor. He sounds deep and regal.
Why don't we make him Bill Clinton? Okay. I see Bill Clinton's on here. I think you did a good Bill Clinton before.
I don't want to do Bill Clinton anymore.
Let's see. He could be Barbara Walters.
I don't know how to do Barbara Walters.
How about Winnie the Pooh?
Okay. So you're saying that if I do beat you, it would be a miracle.
Excellent.
Very clever wordplay. You know, oh, he is M the Miracle.
He's like a bad wrestling character. Like, when they just developed one aspect of his gimmick, and that just has to be it for a while. Beck, do you remember when Ted DiBiase's kid first debuted? And his whole thing was like, okay, well, his whole gimmick at that time was like, my dad could buy anybody, but me, I'm priceless. And that was his word. He just worked that into every shitty promo he had. So
he just became second Ted DiBiase.
Yeah, like eventually you just had to like find ways to get it in there. Like, so anyway, I'm gonna fight you at SummerSlam. And hey, how much is popcorn? Like, I don't know, like $4.95. Well, that's interesting because I'm priceless. Boom, drop mic, like walking out. I'm excited.
That reminds me of Curtis Axel's thing when he showed back up, where he tried to push Better Than Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where you're just like, I'm Better Than Perfect. How? Just damn.
I'm extra ultimate. I
get that though. Yeah, he's the miracle, so he's got to find ways to do it. Yeah.
I enjoy this. I'm excited to see where this goes until he turns into like.
We're gonna have to change. You realize he's gotta change into like a boot.
Yeah, like I'm like, what is? Let's all three of us right now. Let's take a bet. What does he turn into when he releases? Because it's gonna be something completely arbitrary to what he is right now.
Right. We went from sniper to owl, centaur, angel thing, and we went from cloaked hooded guy to giant hand. So, I think I'm just going to stick with boot.
It'll be
a giant boot.
Lisa?
And his thing will be, I'm going to give you the boot.
Oh, he changed his gimmick too?
I don't know.
To say he becomes a very pretty, sparkly fairy.
Because he's so manly looking right now.
Yeah, like he's so masculine and like fucking, you know, like Viking, battle, Thor, destroy you kind of now. When he transforms, he's gonna get like big glittery wings and maybe like a tutu. Maybe like he puts his hair up in like big pigtails or something like that. But then he fires like fairy dust that like explodes your brain from the inside or something like that.
It just so happens
that Byakuya's Bankai defends against fairy dust and like spins it back at him or something.
I want the more of his armor he loses, the more powerful he gets.
He doesn't have a lot right now. He's shirtless.
He's kind of powerful, so just wait till he's fully naked.
He's like, the helmet's going to like fall off, and he's going to be Shinin.
So basically, it's going to be him walking around with a dish rag over his cock when he's fighting at full power.
He'll be like cleverly placed like swords, you know?
Yeah, like, and his final reveal is he just rips the towel off, and it's just a shot from behind. You see his butt as he faces down Zaraki.
The entire fight that's going on, Renji's just going, ah!
It's super effective. Come on.
Byakuya's trading, you know, witty battle rapport with the guy, and Renji's just going, ah!
I assume Renji, at that point, his head has been impaled through a wall.
Don't ask what by, but...
Yeah.
All right.
Move on to Fairy Tail.
Yeah.
All right. Fairy Tail, chapter 465. 400 years. And the cover page is Sabertooth Guild members, who gives a fuck. Anyways,
taking a selfie.
Yeah, no one's nude. This is a new one. Last time, Natsu revealed what his special technique was as he showed down with Xerath. He had all of Ignil's power contained within him. He punched at Xerath, and Xerath, for the first time, finally felt like something would be able to kill him. Nick, this is the final chapter of Fairy Tail because Natsu defeated Xerath, right? Okay, 2 pages and he's okay.
And you know who we have to blame for it?
Natsu.
Nope.
Xerath. Nope. Who else is here? Glasses, dude.
Oh, boy.
Natsu did not defeat Ignil. Xerath. Xerath is still standing.
He also did not defeat Ignil either.
No, he didn't defeat him either. But Xerath does note that he is incredibly impressed by your power. I've always believed that you might be the one to finish me off, but I'm afraid you're a bit too late. You see, I came to this desire to the end of the world over the death of myself. That is, until I just met you now. And he talks about how, you know, it's possible, maybe, that if Natsu does attack him with the second attack, he could indeed kill Xerath, because Xerath is feeling surprisingly mortal at this moment. But he notes that if you do so... before he notes that, he explains he wants to give a very important detail to Natsu, and that is that Natsu is his brother. And this is something that the audience has known for a little bit, but Natsu has not been told before. He's never known any relation to Xerath beyond, hey, you're that asshole who's doing bad things. And Natsu actually has kind of an interesting reaction, just because you don't see Natsu have to deal with a lot of heavy stuff at times. So it's kind of interesting seeing him have to comprehend the fact, like, oh no, you're not just, like, you don't just know this guy, you're actually his, like, dead brother brought back to life, and then, as we'll find out, set into the future. You actually have a lot of things going on right now, buddy. But Xerath explains that, yes, 400 years ago, our parents and you were burned to death by Dragonfire, but I basically researched how to create new life. And you were sort of the result of that. Aetherius Natsu Dragnil, end, as we found out before. Natsu's obviously like, what? This is ridiculous. I can't possibly be end. Ignil said he couldn't defeat end. Xerath explains, like, yes, he couldn't technically defeat it, but that's because of an emotional attachment. He could physically have crushed you with his claw anytime he wanted to, but he loved you. That's why he couldn't beat you. And, you know, Tartarus didn't actually find this. Mardgear, the great Mardgear, just found this book and kind of assumed.
I, Mardgear.
Yeah. I, Mardgear, myself, Mardgear. He just found it and used it to bring other, you know, demons into this world. But he's not the big thing either. You are end. And Natsu's like, I don't believe you. So he shoots the book, and Natsu is hurt just the same way. And Xerath says, you always did have trouble listening to people. You never even tried to learn languages or letters, which implies Natsu can't read, which is amusing. That's why I went to consult with my friend Ignil. See, Ignil was one of the few dragons at the time who didn't view humanity as the enemy, and I encountered him while looking for medical herbs. He suggested that you be taught Dragon Slayer magic, and he goes on to explain that there was a plan between several of the dragons to essentially teach Dragon Slayers their dragon magic, and then bind them together to defeat Actalogia. You know, they picked Natsu, Gajeel, Wendy, Sting, and Rogue, who we know are the 5 natural Dragon Slayers. Is still technically Luxus and Cobra, I think, is the other guy, who are fake Dragon Slayers. I guess people who just learned it all outside of that. I don't think they've actually ever explained those two.
Not really, no.
But those 5 were chosen. And not only were they kind of picked to be this, they were also then sent into the future, because these were children with no ties to humanity left, presumably no families. They teamed up with a couple different people. The celestial wizard by the name of Anna opened the door for us. They show the celestial wizard Layla, which is Lucy's mom, was part of it as well. And it basically
could be a hint of the connection to Brandish mentioned.
And also the one Zeref mentioned last week when he was talking about the various people that he was kind of reminiscing about. And everyone arrived on this date that everyone thought was the end of dragons, but it was actually that you had just kind of woken up in a new era 400 years from now, and Zeref's been waiting for him this whole time, but it was simply too long. I'd been through too much, so many that I forgot the importance of a single human life, and then I met Mavis and I lost her too, so I, and Natsu has had enough, he's heard enough, he's going to beat on him. Before he can go in for that final punch, Zeref says, you are a demon of the Book of Zeref, so if you kill me, then you'll die too. And Natsu gives none of the fucks. He's going in for his final strike. He's like, I'm gonna kill you to death. No, he just says,
he proves it by taking out the Book of End and, like, shooting it too.
Yeah, so Natsu does know it is, but he doesn't care about his life. He wants to end this. He wants to put an end to this fight before it gets super awful for a lot of people, because Zeref is unstoppable otherwise. This was their one trump card. But Natsu does not get to strike him, because instead, Happy flies down, grabs Natsu by the back of the shirt, and physically drags him away somehow. I guess Happy's super strong.
Well, he has the power to carry Natsu around. So, I mean, he basically gets him up off the ground, so he's got no leverage, and flies him away.
That is true. It's you, Nick, your big, smart, sexy brain.
And also, it seems as if it seems as though he talks Natsu down, basically.
Yeah. Because he essentially kind of explains, like, I don't want you to do this. I don't want you to die. You know, you're my friend. I love you. I don't want you to die. And aren't you my friend? Like, you can't do this to us. And, you know, the entire time this is happening, all of the remainder of Ignol's power is slowly fading away. But, you know, he has no choice but to relinquish it. He can't do anything now. Happy took that one opportunity away. They fly away. And now Zeref is left smiling as he watches Natsu disappear into the distance. Says, now nothing can stop me. Farewell, Natsu.
I really like this chapter, actually.
This is a very big chapter. Quite a lot was revealed in it. It was some new information for us as an audience. We did not know about the time traveling aspect necessarily, which does explain something from way back when in the Fighting Festival arc. There was that fucking absurd rule about, like,
if you're a certain age, you can't get out
of
here.
It was two things. It was like, you either can't be made of stone or be over 300 years old or something like that to go through the barrier.
Specifically to stop Makara, but end up stopping Gajeel and Natsu as well.
Yeah, so now we kind of get an explanation to why that also.
I just assumed it was because they had the dragons dwelling inside of them that they couldn't do that. One of those two will work.
But this is also a chapter that's important because Natsu now knows he has relation to Zeref. He knows his origin. He knows he's End. Mm-hmm. And it brings a lot of baggage with it. How'd you enjoy this chapter, Annalisa?
So I don't regularly read Fairy Tale. I listen to you guys every week talk about it, but I don't really read it myself. So it was interesting kind of jumping in after, God, so many weeks of not reading this and being like, oh, wow.
Zeref's kind of hot.
No, he's really not.
Oh, really? He seems like he'd be like the super, like, everything
he's
with a vagina would be all over this guy.
He's kind of cute, but he looks like he's like 12 years old.
So. Well, he's also crying a lot too, which I think.
Well, he did have a romance with Mavis, who also looks 12 years old. So there you go.
But I really do. I think it's an interesting chapter. It's really interesting to see how Natsu kind of deals with this. And I really do like this part of Natsu's character where he's like, okay, so I'm going to kill myself. But yeah, I'm going to prevent so much, you know, terribleness from happening. I really, really like that part of his character. And I really wish you'd just punched him. But like, I also like Happy saving him, so I'm pretty torn. But I can't say I really liked this chapter, but I thought it was really interesting. I didn't hate it.
Yeah. I thought it presented a very interesting conflict, because Fairy Tale has always been about, you know, friendship, you know, triumphs over everything. You know, we just have to work together and hold hands and believe really hard and everything's going to be okay.
Sometimes, literally.
And in this particular instance, friendship prevents them from actually getting the job done, because if Natsu had just been able to grit his teeth down and ignore everything else and punched Xerath and killed him, the world would have been saved, basically, except for Acknowledgia, but there's... Well, no. Acknowledgia would... Actually, Happy saved the world! Because Acknowledgia is still out there! And no one's gonna stop him without the Dragon Slayers!
Happy's secretly the grand hero of this series!
But... putting that aside, Xerath would have been stopped, and so the villain of the story would be, you know, done. In this case, friendship technically stops them, and they have to find some other means now, because Natsu's power doesn't work. And now, of course, it throws in that difficulty of, okay, well, if we actually kill Xerath, then we're gonna lose these five people, including three who are actually important. I thought that was very interesting, and I like Natsu's reaction to Xerath, because he's very stunned by the revelation, but then, yeah, as Annalise mentioned, he pushes forward because he realizes this is important. He's got to stop Xerath to protect his friends. Although I think that he's not quite thinking through the whole, I'm killing Wendy and Gajeel if I do this.
Is it that they die too? Because they're not part of it.
Oh!
I think it would only kill Natsu, because he's an actual... demon tech.
Okay, so yeah,
he's
that is
end.
That is very different than that. Also explains why
it would. I think if Natsu still
sacrifice, yeah.
I think if Natsu still dies, Acknowledgia wins because you're losing one of the five Dragon Slayers, legitimate ones, whatever you want to call it. So
right.
I could still see that, but I don't believe the other ones would.
Well, and that also explains it. That also explains his actions better, because he's just sacrificing himself as opposed to himself and his friends. And I like the fact that, you know, just, you know, having one other person there being like, no, this is, you know, fairy tale, this is what we're about, you know, and you're my best friend, I can't let you do this. You know, yeah, you can point the finger and say, oh, Happy, you ruined everything, but it's like, you can really see where he's coming from. You know, it's, you know, defeating the enemy is not as important as the reason they're defeating the enemy, which is to protect each other.
And this is consistent with the tone of fairy tale, which in the past has had moments where it seems like characters... maybe sacrifice themselves, and the point of essentially going back, you know, that whole funeral of Urza that she watched over was to the point of like, you, even if it gives victory, we don't want anyone to sacrifice themselves, you know, it's better if you're alive.
This was done better than that, though.
Yeah, well, that was awful. That was a horrendous part of that series. But I enjoy this chapter. I think I can agree with Annalisa where I see it's not amazing. I think there's parts of it I like. There's cheesy parts of it. I think I just don't see Happy as a character. It's like, I guess
he's
it's
at school.
I really kind of like equate him to like the Going Merry, where I'm like, you're just the thing that transports people
around. But you like
the
around. Going Merry.
I love the Going Merry. It broke my goddamn heart, Nick. Going Merry didn't talk that much. No, I do
oh,
like
Happy,
it.
You're like the Going Merry, except worse.
Yeah, except you fly, which is just
talk.
Yeah, and you eat.
That's, you eat fish.
Ships don't eat.
And you're obsessed with Carla, which is like, come on, you're
pathetic. Yeah, boats don't fuck. Hashtag boats don't fuck. But no, I still can see, I still enjoy a lot. I like the development it gives. And I also like that their confidence is gone. Because everything related to this, like, you know, how can we beat Xerath? Natsu's like, I got this shit right here. We don't need anything else. And now he's like, fuck, this is gone.
Right. He lost his ace in the hole.
And he also has to deal with the fact that that was the last remnants of his father as well. And presumably that's gone, so he has nothing left of him.
And I like the way that their battle unfolds, because Xerath just is like, this power might be capable of killing me, so he doesn't fight back, so we don't actually see how a fight between Natsu with Igneel's power would have done against Xerath if he were actually fighting, because he even, you know, tells the army, no, don't interfere, just let him pummel me to death. He lets Natsu take a ton of free shots, basically, once he realized this power could kill me, and then he leaves the decision up to Natsu whether or not to do it. And then Happy comes in, and it's basically the only way that you could go through having those two personalities clash without one side breaking, is to have someone else come in and break it up. So yeah. I thought it was handled very well.
So an enjoyable chapter.
Yeah. Okay. Food Wars, Shokugeki no Soma, chapter, what are we even on right now?
146. 146. Secret ingredient.
Yes. So, last time, Azon revealed what his dish was, and everyone was like, it's chicken and the rice has chicken stock in it! And
they Are you going to be on this for like the next three months?
There was no honey mustard!
None. None whatsoever.
So, but then Soma said, hey, my dish isn't completed yet, and he went about finishing up his pot stickers, and he now opens this chapter by saying, you know, my dish isn't complete yet, after he has called Azon a coward for not wanting to even bother seeing what his complete dish would be like. And he's like, ah, now I'm going to reveal the true face of my dish. And Azon's like, all right, what are you going to do? Let's do it. Show me what you got. But it's going to be the last thing you ever do. So go on. Have fun making the last dish you'll ever cook at Totsuki. Which is a great line. I like that. He's so confident. He's like, it's the last thing you're ever going to make at this school. So, you know, enjoy yourself. He's going all over his face. And so Soma rushes off to get some stuff that he had set aside, which is chicken stock!
It's really the secret ingredient. Like, they just need the fucking, what do they call the dude from fucking Iron Chef? The Don or the Dean? What the fuck they call that dude?
Chairman.
Chairman! They just need the fucking chairman to be like,
chicken stock!
The chicken stock! Land cuisine! Bite a fucking pepper.
Or an apple if you're American version, but, you know.
Damn weeaboos. Go ahead.
So, yeah, this is the stuff that Soma had actually set aside back in the kitchen when they first started. So, yeah, he actually had this planned out ahead of time as opposed to Azon going, what can I do with chicken? Chicken stock. and also, Soma's got some extra ingredients that he's holding on to as well. So they're trying to figure out, what the hell is he doing with chicken stock and pot stickers and all this stuff that they're doing? Why does he have a skillet? What is he doing? And so someone sets about adding all this extra stuff to his dish. And so he adds hot water to the skillet, and then he starts pouring on Parmesan cheese. And they're like, what are they doing? And the head
of... taking bullshit!
Yeah. The head of the Shokugeki who's been watching on the TV this whole time says... He's making Hanetsuki winged pot stickers! I don't know what any of this is.
Yeah, well, this is ridiculous. I feel like if I'm in this series, what happens to me is, like, they're like, what's Chef Larios making? He just seems to be pulling out a bag of Wendy's. This is ridiculous. And, like, I open, they're like, that's just a junior bacon cheeseburger. And I'm like, oh, just wait. Well, he's taking the chicken nuggets and putting them on the junior bacon cheeseburger. Is this a alteration of the McGangbang that everyone loves and just... I'm like, uh-oh, you haven't seen my secret ingredient as I pull out the honey mustard and start spraying it across. Like, oh,
oh yeah, honey mustard, look junior at bacon cheeseburger McNuggets.
Oh, hold on. You thought it was done, but I got fries with this. And then
this can't even be called a junior bacon cheeseburger anymore because it's too thick now. Now it's a senior bacon cheeseburger.
That's when, like, I assume all the judges, like, their clothes explode off. They're like, no one's ever thought of this before. And that's when, like, there's equal parts flowers and women's panties being thrown at me, like, oh, you're so amazing, Chef Larios! Make your glorified sandwich for me now!
And of course, skeptic judge from before is like, see, with every step he takes trying to add stuff to this dish, he's already destroyed the unique flavors of the Jidori the moment he added pork jowl to the filling, but now he's going to slather it with cheese, too? So, basically, it's like, oh, it's the opposite of young Azon's refined and elegantly simplistic masterpiece. It's overcomplicated. It's all these extra stupid ingredients with it and so on. We ought to pass judgment right now. And Azon is still worried, however. He's looking at this and he's thinking, he still hasn't added that chicken stock. Is there something more we're missing?
That's why I pop back in. I'm like, you didn't understand the true value of this sandwich. All dollar items! Dollar value menu dollar items! This entire delicious sandwich, less than $5. I just feel like you're ignoring me, the fact that he has a lot of things going on with his meal, but mine, $5. Eyes on. That's right up your alley, come on.
Even more.
You can take that 4 for 4 menu, and at it and just release its perfected form, which is it's all together. It's like when the Daily Show brings up Arby's, but instead of shitting on it, we're just like, oh no, Wendy's is great.
Yeah, like, Wendy's is delicious. It's incredible. There's one so close to me. It's like they should hear this, want to sponsor us, and just deliver. I could just open up my window. I'm like, oh, hey, Wendy's, this is right here. Thank you.
Oh, gotta nail that manga and Wendy's crossover demographic.
They might get annoyed, though, when we get to Fairy Tale every so often. They're like, they're shitting on Wendy's a lot during this one. No, not Wendy's, just Wendy. It's just one. You're not the same. You're a delicious fast food restaurant. She's a creepy pedophile vehicle. It's weird. Don't ignore that one. Give me this one.
Ugh. So, Skeptic Judge is like, come on, give it up. And Soma says, shh. I'm entering my Zen cooking zone. As he waits for his dish to start popping and sizzling as the water has steamed off, and he's like, now is the perfect moment. This looks way more cool than it should.
My hand's slowly popping in from the side with a bottle of honey mustard, like just a little bit. Ah, shit, the bottle on the top fell off. Whatever, it made it better.
This is like a thing that It seems unique to Soma, honestly, as he does something very simple and rustic, but he makes it look super cool and stuff. Like, he did it in the, the make serve, like, 300 servings or something like that with the breakfast challenge thing, where you've just, like, made the cooking part of the thing drawing people in, and he's, like, all doing, like, you know, short order chef, you know, Japanese steakhouse type stuff. It doesn't seem like anyone else really does that.
I almost feel like, because everyone has their thing, I feel like Soma's thing is to be like fucking Uncle from Jackie Chan. I got one more thing!
You haven't seen this ingredient yet!
Yeah, you haven't seen my secret ingredient!
He basically is like, I've added potato starch to the stock I made, and drizzled the stuffed wings with this ankake sauce, and it's done! Dig in, Aizen Senpai! And Aizen's like, what is this bullshit? He doesn't say that. I bet you made this whole thing up as you went along, just dumping in whatever, and this just proves it. You were never, ever fit for the Totsuki Institute in the first place. It's this wonder. It is like impossible to recreate some of the expressions Aizen has made in this whole period. Because he literally turns into an alien for this one panel where his cheeks puff out, his veins are all bulging, his skin tone has changed, and his eyes are bugging out and stuff. Right? See,
I've started changing a bit with my hair, and I feel like if I just dye it white, I feel like I could pull off a decent Aizen, and I'm just like...
Scrubbing Aizen.
Yeah. I'm not going to shave. I'm not that dedicated.
Like, you'll do, like, the facial expressions and stuff while I do his voice.
Yeah, I'm like, hey, guys, I'm going to be cosplaying. I don't ever feel like shaving. So this week I'm Dude Tora, and she doesn't shave. So, you know, just put up with it. Like, doesn't shave her legs? It doesn't shave anything. It's, yeah.
So, Soma observes Aizen's reaction. He's, like, trembling from it. He's like, did you think maybe just for a second that my stuffed wings were really good? And the judges are like, what? No, there's no way. No, what could be good about that dish? And Aizen recovers a little bit and he's trying to calm down. And the skeptic judge is like, it's ridiculous. No, there's no need to taste it. Come on, let's just pass judgment. And one of the other judges reaches over and grabs him before he can press the button. And he says, can we just, you know... Just one bite, man. You know? Just taste a little bit, man. He is intrigued because Aizen reacted very much to it. And so Skeeter is still like, no, I still won't taste it. But the other two do try it. And their clothes burst off and they're freaking out over it. And the guy who was writing before, like, how? After all this stuff was piled on, how is the flavor of the Jidori still so strong? And Soma says, the answer is in the ankake sauce, because I seasoned the Jidori stock with some soy sauce, cooked sake, vinegar, sugar, sesame seed oil, and one special secret ingredient.
Honey mustard! They're like, get Chef Larios out of here for the last time!
I'm like, expecting it to be like the cooking episode of Futurama where Bender becomes a chef, where he's like, water! Ordinary water! So the confidence was inside of Bender all along. Yes, ordinary water! Laced with LSD! But yeah, so, Soma says, to finish things off, well, Aizan-senpai, you thought my dish was good, didn't you? Now, doesn't that make you want to put our dishes side to side and see which one is better? So, yeah, it seems as though Soma might have Aizan cornered here. Maybe lends a little bit of credence to the idea that he had a plan the whole time, as opposed to the usual Soma thing of making things up as he went along. It's intriguing, and again, another beautiful Aizan expression in this chapter, but I'm just kind of waiting for the big reveal of the next one to really bring it home.
Ollie, so which one do you want to eat more?
Oh god, Soma's so much. It just seems so good. I hate this series, guys. I hate it because it makes me so hungry every week.
Now, what is... I've never heard of the sauce that he's used.
Ankake sauce?
Ankake sauce. What is it?
I'm going to pretend I know and look it up.
Yeah!
I'm like, alright, well, let me go this one. What's doujin sauce?
According to this, it's a starch-based sauce.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah. This kind of thick sauce is often used for Chinese dishes. They mentioned that, I think, in the chapter. In fact, ankake means this kind of thick sauce, but Japanese imagine automatically Chinese-style dishes with thick sauce on rice, noodles, etc. Hmm.
Alright, fair enough.
So it is a thicker kind of sauce, I guess.
So everybody's on board. They'd rather try, you could only have a bite of one. And the other one is going to be thrown into a void in space afterwards. You never get to try it. All the ingredients are then destroyed afterwards, so it can never be recreated in the chef shot.
Well, I totally want Aizan shot over Soma.
Aizan looks good. And there's something wonderful in the simplicity, I guess, of it. But Soma's is just so interesting seeming. And when he made it, it was so interesting to watch him, I guess, to read the panels, because like you guys said, like, he does this. He makes the cooking part of the show. Like, he's a cook, but he's also an entertainer in a way. Mm-hmm. And so even if they made the same dishes, you know, like, I think I'd always go for Soma because he'd make it more interesting looking.
Yeah, I can dig it. And I'll be curious. I guess what we're all waiting for is presumably next chapter, we'll find out what happens when Rindo takes a bite.
Yeah, I think that's going to be very important.
Yeah, we'll see all of her clothes blow off. It'll be super. I mean, because we'll find out if hers was better than. I on it, that's right. Yeah.
She, like, puts on an overcoat after eating Soma.
She's wearing more clothes.
It feels so warm inside, and that's what, it feels as though being wrapped up in a burqa. And
she's like, oh, this food was so delicious, my tits got smaller. I'm like, wow, that was disappointing.
I don't feel like licking my lips anymore.
Yeah, she's like, oh, my fangs are gone. I'm like, oh, everything exotic about her's gone.
I don't like eating food anymore. What happened to her?
This food was so delicious, this nun's habit just appeared on me out of nowhere.
I never need to think sexual thoughts ever again.
Oh, God.
I'm like, I'm changing that. You see, like, my typewriter come out.
You write your smut.
Yeah, I write like this, too.
I think we gotta pick up the pace here as we move into My Hero Academia. We are
with. They're going on a fool's school trip! Cat girls! Done!
Basically, number 70, Wild Wild Pussycats, which sounds very pornographic, honestly. We get some of the fallout of Deku's confrontation with, with Tamura. He's interviewed by the police and stuff like that, trying to figure out, okay, you know, where did he come from, all that stuff, and trying to get information about the Villains League and so on and so forth. I forget if this guy who is doing the interview and stuff, because All Might is very familiar with him and seemingly has a rapport with him. I don't remember him showing up before.
He shows up, I think, right after the villains attack the school.
Okay. It's been a while since then.
Yeah, and he's introduced to... He knows All Might. He knows All Might's secret.
Okay. Because it's been... Yeah, that would have been
a long time
ago.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they have a bit of a conversation after Deku's mom has come, and she's like, oh, I was so worried about you, you know, I can't take this, you know, you being in danger, and so on and so forth, and they go off, and All Might stays behind and talks with the policeman for a bit, and, you know, he says, you know, you always keep an eye on those kids, and so on and so forth, but I don't think you're suited to being a teacher. And he says, okay, you know, let's catch All for One and stuff. So I'm assuming he's going to be involved in the future as well, as opposed to, I'm a guy in a tie. Goodbye. Yeah. And because of the whole presence of the League of Villains, the school trip has to be changed at the very last minute. So everyone thought they were going to one place, and now, nope, you're going somewhere completely different. And they're going off to training camp together, the classes. There is this confrontation with another class briefly, but not a whole lot really comes from it.
It's just another shot of douche guy again.
Right, and then there is a whole bunch of girls that you know, come by, and one of them chops the douche on the back of the head, and he's like, oh, we don't resent you, you know, from all the stuff down the Swords Festival. We're glad that, you know, we're going to get to work together with you guys on this school trip. And Mineta says, it's a bountiful bay buffet!
Is that your Stone Cold?
I can't do excited Stone Cold, I don't think.
A bountiful bay buffet! Oh, hell yeah!
Oh, there we go.
There's certain stock lines that say that sound much better. So they go off on a... they're riding on the bus and stuff, but they stop in the middle of the mountains! And they're like, okay, yeah, we're just out here to take a bit of a rest stop. And Mina's like, I gotta pee! I'm gonna finish the match, and then I'm gonna piss. they're confronted by the Wild Wild Pussycats, who are these two very enthusiastic girls in kinda sorta schoolgirl uniforms with big cat paws and cat ear extensions on their heads and stuff, and then this little shrimp with a trucker hat that has two horns poking out of it.
What are they called? It's, not divas. Idols. Like, they're like idol outfits.
They're a little bit idol, yeah. And they're like, oh, they're striking this big pose and stuff, while the kid's just gonna, you know, got his hands in the pockets looking like he hates everyone. And, they introduce themselves as they specialize in mountain rescue missions. Or rather, Deku's a tremendous fanboy, and so he's familiar with them. And Uraraka is shooting them this wonderful look. He's like, oh, you know who the Pussycats are, do you? I'm not sure if I have a crush on you. So, one of them says, okay, you know, you guys are going to be staying, you know, at the foot of the mountain over there. By the way, actually, before getting into that, one of them says, oh yeah, they've been in the rescue business for 12 years, and one of them punches him and says, we're 18 at heart.
Yeah. You go, Pussycats, you go!
They don't like him fucking giving out their age.
Well, he doesn't say what their age is. He says
they've been in the business for 20 years.
12 years.
So unless they started it up when they were like, you know, 12, then people are going to know they're obviously not the young, you know, hot stuff they're trying to look like they are.
It also seems to indicate that that third member probably joined them later, unless he is just a small, young-looking adult.
Nick, you'll learn something. Women are very sensitive about their age. Annalisa, how old are you? You can't see it. She just kicked me in the nuts through the internet. It looks really bad. She's not cool with that question.
You seem to be in good shape for a guy who just got kicked.
You know what? It happens.
He's got steel balls.
Yeah. Eventually, you get used to it.
So, yeah, the class is basically told, you have to make your way through the woods in order to get to your lodging, and you're going to fail the test if you're not there by a certain time. And then one of them just collapses the ground that they're standing on out from under them, and they're dumped into the forest of magical beasts that they have to make their way through. And Mineta runs off immediately, saying, like, still got a piss! Drag too many bears.
I gotta urine.
Mineta almost runs smack dab into basically a Skag from Borderlands.
It looks really cool.
This weird monstrous thing with like weird tusks coming up from the bottom. It's got like these tiny little slit eyes. They might not be its eyes. Those might just be like its nostrils, but it looks horrible and monstrous. And Coda tries to calm it down and prevent it from attacking, but it doesn't work. And so Deku quickly realizes that it is composed of dirt somehow. And so, yeah, it's not an actual creature. And so, yeah, they rush in and they kick its ass. And there's this awesome page and a half spread of Ida and Bakugo and Deku and... oh, God, I almost got a page for someone. I almost said Shinomiya. I was like, no, that's not the right series. so, yeah, they all rush in together and just blow it apart in this awesome picture. And, yeah. That's basically all that happens, really. And the Pussycats seem as if they're going to be conducting the train at this point. And the kid with them, Kota, seems like he doesn't want to be there, basically.
Oh my god, the Pussycats are so cute. I love their outfits. I love their paws. It's... they're so cute.
I like their ear things, because they're not just, like, weird, you know, decorative cat ears. It looks like they shoot missiles or something.
Yeah, and clearly one of them has a really cool power, being able to summon dirt, badass monster things.
Mm-hmm. One of them was able to just basically throw the cliff at them, yeah, and just knock them off. Complete landmass shifting, which makes sense if they're supposed to be like a mountain rescue team.
Right.
Yeah, I can't wait to see their fourth member, because they say that it's a four-member team, but clearly there are only three here right now. Mm-hmm. So
it's a very good chapter. I like it. I think the only thing I had is I was a little bit disappointed that the end shot of the final, like, of all of them fighting, that Uraraka didn't get, like, a shot in there. I thought she'd get, like, a cool action scene, too. I was kind of hoping for one out of her, but it's cool getting that shot of, like, at least those four, like, in a, like, a battle shot. And it makes me excited to see, like, what this is going to be, like, a, hopefully, like, a very action-packed kind of a learning experience for them. Mm. Very cool.
Okay, let's head right into One Piece Chapter 809, The Cat Viper. Last time, Luffy and company were getting a lot of background information on, you know, the events that unfolded leading up to, you know, the battle that that happened and so on and so forth. And we, for the most part, we get more of that here. We get a little bit of stuff in the present where Doggy Pine is, like, kind of thinking about eating Brooke, basically. And then he falls asleep very, very suddenly as Wanda... By the way, had an epiphany. I think that someone has probably pointed this out to us before, but... it didn't click until this week. Wan is the onomatopoeia sound that dogs make in Japan.
Like, I didn't even know that was a thing there.
So yeah, instead of going woof woof, people say Wan Wan for dogs. So Wan, duh, because she's a dog.
Oh, that makes sense.
So it didn't click. I think that someone has probably pointed that out to us already, but it just didn't register. So yeah, that's why you've got Carrot the Rabbit and Wanda, dog.
I still don't remember her name. It's going to be the same thing next week, too. Uh-huh.
That's
you're like, what's that dog girl's name again?
I think it's Wolfda.
Yeah, something. Shmeri? Is that it? Like Mary, but with a shma at the beginning? Like she's part of the Smodcast Network, Shmeri?
So, Doggy Pine suddenly falls asleep very quickly, and Wanda explains, well, yes, the Mokomo Dukedom is ruled over by two kings at all times, and Doggy Pine is, you know, rules over it, you know, during the day, but during the night, Cat Viper is charged with protecting over it. So that's why he very suddenly fell asleep. They each have 12 hours between 6 and 6 in the day, and also all the people from Doggy Pine's house fall asleep as well. Like, the doctors fall asleep immediately, too.
Now, Nick, you get to be named one of them. You can be Doggy Pine or Cat Viper. You have to take a name, though.
Cat Viper.
The Doggy Pine is kind of cute, though. No, they're both pretty awful names.
I'll go with Cat Viper.
Annalisa?
Cat Viper.
Damn. Oh, yeah.
All right, fine. Well, I'll be in Camp Doggy Pine over here.
You can have your stupid dog. I'll be an awesome cat.
I will.
Yeah, that's right. Cats forever, man.
Oh, you guys don't like Scotia?
I didn't say I don't like Scotia. I said I don't like dogs.
Bring her in here. She's going to be so sad to hear that.
So
she has very expressive eyes.
Shishilian, as he's nodding off, I guess, thinks back to the battle as well as he's falling asleep. Arriving on the scene with the rest of the musketeers to try and fight.
Sorry.
Brother trying to sneak on the show or something?
No, it was just being mean because you're over here in the thing. Oh, okay. So it's just me. It's just me yelling at you quietly.
So yeah. Anyhow, the Musketeers, you know, arrive on the scene and try and help out as well. Duke Dogstorm arrived as well and try and help out. And then we actually get the Duke trying to take on Jack. It was Jack, right? The mammoth Jack.
Yes.
Yeah.
The mammoth. Jack the Drought.
Jack tries to, you know, do his whole, you know, I'm going to swing my giant trunk at you and hit you thing, and the Duke just stiff arms it to block it. And, yeah, he's a bit of a badass when he's actually up on his feet. Because he then, I'm not sure, I can't quite follow exactly what happens, but
he blocks the trunk, and right. Everyone's like, holy shit, like, this is a man worth.
Oh, that's what happened. I'm getting confused with something that happens later, my mistake. Okay. But 6 p.m. basically hits as the battle wears on for a long time, and so all of the day forces have to pull back as suddenly Cat Viper awakens, and so he rushes onto the scene, and he is a Cat Viper, it seems. I think that his tail does make him actually look like a snake at first when he first arrives, because you can't tell where his body ends and stuff. But he rushes in with the Guardians, you know, he is the King of the Night, he's got his own forces with him and stuff. And he grabs Jack, he does this like triple somersault, jumping up to Jack, grabs onto his trunk, and just completely like sunset flip power bombs him, basically. Just flips completely over him and drags him by the trunk all the way down and slams him down onto his back. And Cat Viper says, oh, I hear you're looking for a warrior of Wano. Well, I wouldn't let a samurai take a single step on this island, and if one tried, I'd chew him to pieces. And then someone new arrives in the scene, calling for Master Jack, and we don't get a good look at them yet, as if there's an announcement that One Piece is going to be off next week.
Bummer!
Boo.
This is an interesting chapter. It's a little bit more kind of storytelling for this place, kind of get some interesting bits, though, out of it. So, I mean, I enjoy it for that regard, you know, no matter what. But it is interesting because it's the first time, I feel like I can't fucking get the One Piece wiki had a load for me, but I'm trying to remember. I think this is the largest bounty we've ever heard of before.
You're right, because Jack is like a billion-dollar bounty or something.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember what the bounty of the guy who was just revealed as a warlord was. The one who's supposedly Whitebeard's kid, was it?
He had a really high one recently. Yeah.
I don't think it was billion, though.
Yeah, I know it was like basically around the same range as Straw Hats, but yeah, 1 billion is pretty enormous. And it's interesting because you're like, you know, when we first saw like Doflamingo and Kuma, they had like bounties that were like 200 and like 300 million. And you're like, wow, that's crazy. Those guys must have done a lot. I'm like, how the fuck is this dude won 1 billion berry worth of damage? It's a pretty high jump. So it's kind of interesting to see that there. But I like just seeing the designs here were pretty cool. I like, you know, Dogstorm or whatever just, you know, blocks the attack and then Cat Viper just tosses him. It's just interesting to see. It's not necessarily anything like crazy, but it's a solid chapter all the way around.
Yeah.
Whitebeard's supposed kid has a 480 million.
Okay, so it's right underneath what Luffy's is.
According to this, yeah, there is actually a list of the highest active bounty currently known. It is Jack the Drought. The last known highest bounty would have been Ace's at 550 million. So apparently this guy's been doing some shit, and considering the general attitude he has demonstrated so far, where he's just like, I'm gonna wreck everything, and that he is a mammoth and that he is part of Kaido's forces, I can kind of buy that. Yeah, although it is possible that the guy is exaggerating his bounty slightly in order to pump him up more.
And bounty doesn't mean anything necessarily. Right. It's not a quantifier strength, so.
Right.
He's like, I've destroyed 17,000 orphanages. I do not fight big people, though.
Well, and also like how Blackbeard like did not have a bounty. Mm-hmm. So
doesn't necessarily mean anything.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting stuff, but, you know, it's just kind of more background information in general.
So. Yeah. Solid, though.
Yeah.
All right, let's cap things off with Toriko, because unfortunately there's no World Trigger this week.
Bullshit! So
next
angry.
Week, guys, next week.
I'm so sad. I really came to the point I just made up a chapter in my mind of something that happened this week just so I could feel like there was World Trigger. There was a fight and everybody talked about how cool Ninomiya was.
No!
Gourmet 350 waiting ingredients. Last time Komatsu was basically came to his senses within
the fish.
Spirit world, and he's trying
to... Can we just go? He cooked the fish?
Yeah, he realizes that none of the ingredients are working and that only another will actually retain all of its taste and stuff, so they go about trying to prepare another, and they're like, normally it would take thousands of years to prepare, and Komatsu's like, I can do it way fucking faster than that because I'm Komatsu. And they basically get it prepared in like 60 years... Or it feels as if 60 years have passed, and eventually Komatsu's like, oh, we prepared an under, and that's the way that the chapter ends.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
No, you, please.
I really, really enjoyed Toriko, but it's just so fucking weird right now. Just, I don't know about this series, guys.
It's been a little bit hard to follow, because there's been so much kind of going on. And a lot of it's been kind of jumped to another part. I'm actually able to follow what's going on, although I do feel like this was sort of weird structurally, because we already know this happened, because they showed us that with that, like, two-page spread.
Yeah.
And this is kind of the explanation of it. It's good to have it. Like, it's nice to know this detail. I just feel like it's sort of weird to have seen the end result, then go back and find out the small details of it. I just think it would blow everybody's mind right now if Komatsu's like, I know a special way to cook this fish. I'm going to use chicken stock.
Honey mustard.
No, just chicken stock. It's honey mustard. There's like, oh, that's what God is in this world. That's their God. They're going to get to God, and it's just it's a bottle of Heinz honey mustard. They're like, it's so good. And only 10 calories per tablespoon? You can just eat it in itself. It fits so many diets.
Disgusting.
I just want somebody to be like, wait, he took chicken stock from a chicken he made and he's putting it in fish? This is blowing my mind. This is actually ingenious. Selma and Aizen are hanging themselves in the corner.
The most interesting detail that happens is that Komatsu, while he's preparing it, people see it as if there is another person preparing the dish alongside him, and it's a long-haired figure that Komatsu-san has visions in the last chapter, I think. I don't think we're supposed to know who this is supposed to be yet.
I don't think so.
Okay. What about covers it? But yeah, they go through a lot, and they finish preparing another, basically, and that's where the chapter ends.
Yay.
Okay. So, I guess that finishes up the recap. Let's see here. I'm not sure exactly the order we want to do this.
I'll tell you how we're doing this, Nick.
Let's get our picks of the week out of the way, and then go into the other stuff then.
Well, I just want to know, if you're waiting for the World Trigger or fanfic, it's at the end. You're going to have to sit through the plugs, all right?
I love our plugs.
We do so much for you. This one time, you're going to listen to the plugs. You're going to hear all the detail about how you can catch in with the show, where you can find it. What iTunes reviews have come in, you're going to listen to them all, because it's going to be the very end. We're closing out the show with it. So sit down and get ready, because you're about to go for an even bigger thrill ride.
All right. Let's do our picks for the week. Start off with...
Fuck you, Gav. Sorry, he's in the chat bitching.
Start with our favorite series this week. The audience's pick was One Piece in very close... contest with My Hero Academia and Food Wars, not too far behind either. In fact, there was controversy I saw in the chat room. People were like, "Oh, vote for My Hero Academia, beat One Piece." My Hero Academia has won what, 3 of these in the 5 weeks we've been doing it? You can lose one, chill, you know. So let's see here. Let me get the spreadsheet up. My pick for the week is actually Fairy Tail. I kind of had the opposite problem of what I did last week. Not a lot of stuff really stood out to me in terms of really good quality stuff. There wasn't really a lot of stuff that was bad. It's just like not a lot of stuff seemed exceptional because, you know, we're at a point before the climax in Food Wars. We're doing background information with Toriko and with One Piece. We're getting set up for the next start with My Hero Academia, and all that kind of stuff. So, Fairy Tale was the one that felt like, you know, something really big happened, and it did leave an impact on me, as flawed as it was. You know, I like a lot of it, so I'm gonna pick that.
Like it won't be in Jar. Like, what have you done with Nick?
Oh yeah, one of these weeks, eventually, Bleach is probably gonna win it because you know, if it goes on long enough, but we'll see. I considered Bleach last week, but
yeah. I'll give it to Annalise. I want to hear your chapter of the week first.
It's going to be our first guest series of the week.
Pressure's on. Don't pick the wrong one.
Oh, no! Okay, well, this... My reasoning may be a little off because since I was...
Fuck it up.
I was gone for a couple weeks, so I missed... not counting this week's, I missed 2 weeks' worth. So I read three issues this morning. So I'm going to go with Food Wars. Not precisely because of this particular chapter, but the 3-chapter block that I basically read was just so interesting to me.
I would totally buy that.
And just, I really want to eat those stupid chicken wings. Oh, God. So yeah, I mean, it's a basic reason, but just Azon's expressions over this arc have made me laugh every time. Just the showmanship, especially with Soma listening for the finishing of the frying. I thought it was really solid, so that's what I'm going with.
I can dig it. I'm going to go with My Hero Academia this week. I think Jump was still good. There wasn't any chapter I think that was particularly strong to me, though. Like, no chapter jumped out this week, so I kind of... Yeah, I kind of wasn't totally intentional. I'm just a comedic genius. No, I just kind of went with the one that gave me the best impression, and I think I'm most excited to see what happens with My Hero Academia, just because I like that end shot of, like, the four heroes coming together and punching their way through something. It's just kind of cool and exciting. I considered One Piece, but I didn't have the same reaction a lot of other, you know, series of the week, so other people had, but I just didn't have the same... I know people were like, it's crazy, you know, Dog Storm and Cat Viper fucking suplex, you know, the Mammoth. I'm like, I don't have much of a context for Jack yet to be impressed by that. I don't know really anything about him. He just is a Mammoth, you know. And it's cool, but just doesn't have the same weight to me. So I just...
He knocked over buildings. That's all I really want to know about.
Yeah. So I liked My Hero Academia, and that's the one I gave for the week.
Okay. And then our weekly MVP, the character that kind of stood out to us the most this week. And, it also kind of felt like, I mean, slim pickings to me, because nothing too much really stood out, but I'm going to go with Asta, actually, because he did something that I thought was, you know, really cool, you know, was, you know, helping out the little kid and stuff, being smart with the way he used his powers by just kind of like, oh, hey, I have the power to, you know, negate stuff so I can negate negative effects without stabbing people. Dunk. Maybe I should have used this power on myself before. you know, being like, hey, wear my, you know, Black Bull's, you know, cloak so that, you know, because, you know, it'll keep you safe. You know, it's got magic knight's courage and stuff. That's a cool thing. I think that, you know, he did stuff that's like, yeah, I can see you being a good shonen protagonist with stuff like that. So, well, you guys.
Alisa, I'll give it to you as well.
I'm really tempted to say the Pussycats guys because I love those.
You can. Yeah. You can say it, Pussycats.
No, but I'm going to go with Natsu.
Really? Okay.
Yes, because I was just really impressed with his selflessness and like, well, okay, this, you know, like he has to deal with a lot this chapter. And he's like, well, okay, I guess I will die, but I'm still going to take you out. So I really thought that was pretty cool. So I'm going to go with him.
Okay.
Mine might seem, I don't even know if people will count or not, because we didn't actually talk about this series, but mine is actually Chitoke from Nisekoi.
Oh, yeah. It was a fun chapter. We didn't talk about it.
That was a good chapter.
It's a sort of back to basics a little bit chapter, her being with Raku, and it's a lot of the jokes we've kind of seen before, but it's just, I love the way Komi draws her expressions. They're so ridiculous, her being like very upset that she keeps calling him rowdy, and she responds to it by punching him more.
But like, who's rowdy and violent?
I love it, like, because we didn't talk about it, but, it, like, the chapter essentially ends with her, like, storming off and, like, you know, Rocker being like, I kind of screwed up there. And I told the guys I would eat dinner, so I guess I'll just stop off at this ramen place real quick. And he walks inside, and Chitoge's, like, buried in, like, four bowls of ramen, and she just looks at him with, like, fucking noodles and shit hanging off her face. The expression is just great. I love the expression of it alone. So I just struck a chord with me. It's very, very amusing. I liked it a lot.
Okay. So with that done, I guess it's time to do all of our plugs and stuff.
Do it!
Yeah, okay. Thank you, everyone, for joining us.
But we're not done. Remember, there's the World Trigger fanfic happening after this.
For the live recording of Weekly Manga Recap on hitbox.tv/Rolotsi, where we record the show normally Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Now, with our faces on the screen.
Besides, we have a video. We're going to use it.
You can follow us.
Oh, wait, Nick, hold on, wait. It's like, what? And then you, like, hold on, we're going to be doing the NWO thing? Are we just not? We can do the fusion dance, where I'm like,
that's what I thought you were doing originally. You can't do the fusion dance while sitting down. Good job.
I also only watched that episode, like, once, so I don't know how the fusion dance goes, but do it with me, Nick. We can become Crick or Nuris.
Oh, those both sound awful.
Fuck you. My power level is way higher than yours anyway. Doesn't work.
You just drag me down.
Yeah.
You can follow us on Twitter. Actually, all the stuff is on the screen now, except for Annalisa's, which, as she mentioned earlier, is Kaito Ace, KAITOU_Ace. And so, yeah, at RoloT, at Y Roller of Time, at WMR Podcast to stay updated on stuff.
I do also need to note, right now, there's the YouTube address. It's not going to work as is. I did not use YouTube enough and only recently discovered that to have a custom URL like that, you have to have a channel for 3 months in good standing with 100 subscribers at least. It's a lot of bullshit. Essentially, we'll get it to that. But for the moment, I'm just going to have to link to it.
Right.
But episodes will be going up there.
We'll include the YouTube link in future plug editions, I think. Be sure to check out all of our past episodes at weeklymangarecap.podbean.com and also subscribe to us on iTunes. Plus, be sure to leave a comment or rating so we can beat the woodworking podcasts on that iTunes.
Which, by the way, a special thank you to AG Superman, who says you guys are like a real-life One Piece because you're both super excited and fun sometimes. Chris does turn to fairy tales sometimes when he talks about World Trigger, but that's okay, and you're still fun to listen to. So thank you.
Special thanks go out to all of our Patreon supporters as well. Your support allows us to create all sorts of bonus content for you guys to enjoy. It's because of your support we now have all the video stuff.
This was a milestone.
So thank you guys so much for helping us do this. So now you can gaze at our ugly mugs while we talk about manga, and we can make goofy expressions. I called us both handsome devils before. You can tell that.
I'm not accepting you calling me ugly now. All right, about that. Okay. I'm a handsome dude all the time. This right here, this is sexual cheesecake 24/7.
This is not a temporary thing.
Yeah. You hear that?
I heard it. Yes. Anyhow, we are going to be doing our next movie commentary this coming Sunday. It's gonna be on Ponyo, so yeah.
If people have asked if we're doing the dub or sub, and I have noted we are specifically doing the dub because Liam Neeson's in it, and that's 90% of the reason I even suggested the movie. I was like, "Holy shit, Liam Neeson's in the fucking! I could talk about Liam Neeson."
Well, it's not gonna be worth it.
Yeah, like he's a jellyfish for 20 seconds at the beginning. I'm like, "Oh, this is amazing!"
Actually, no, he is a main character.
Oh, thank God. He gets eaten by a shark. It's pretty sad. It'd
be a much better movie. Patreon supporters,
yes. Special thanks to Garrick Updike, our newest Patreon supporter. Thank you very much, Garrick. Appreciated.
Special thanks finally go out to Steve Mann, our talker. As you can check out his stuff at a bunch of places. NarcFanboy.DeviantArt.com, HydraBoostTumblr.com, Patreon.com/Steve Mann, so many different places. I haven't named them all yet. Special thanks also go out to Felix Stark for the visual editions of our show, although it's going to be the other visual editions, I guess, from now on. The Infamous Plant as well. you have graduated from the. I can't give you shit for that because you made us this awesome stream frame thing. So thank you so much for that.
Oh, he made, like, a shitty fucking GIF image, too, and it doesn't even make sense because you called him by the regular name.
You expected my name to be the Infamous Planet, but it was me. I don't even know what that's from. Okay. You lost me. Yeah. Thank you guys all so much, and now it's the moment you've been waiting for!
It's time, everybody. Okay, so I sent the email already to Annalisa, and I sent one over to you, Nick. I've sent you both your scripts, because today...
With highlighted versions of stuff we're going to be saying.
You are both going to be playing parts. Nicholas, or sorry, over here, you will be playing Osamu, Annalisa will be playing Katara, and I will be the other parts in this. This is going to be a transcendent experience. I just have to get ready real quick here. I'll be back in just one moment. To my heart and back door. As you all no doubt remember, the last time we joined young Osamu and young Kitora.
Are you doing Mako?
They were busy. This is not your time to talk. They were busy with much turbulence in their relationship. Their beautiful love tainted and torn apart as Kitora found herself welcomed into the arms of the evil Lord Sex Baron's actors. However, true love triumphed in the end. The two of them reunited to defeat Zapdos and continued their beautiful romance ever forward. However, dark ruminations were coming forward. Sinister machinations were in place with a vile group cloaked in shadows that seemed to swear vengeance upon our young couple. What would be their fate? Will their love continue on? Will they be able to survive in such a dangerous world? Will vengeance be taken upon them by these villains or new ones? You may indeed find out these answers on tonight's continuation of the much beloved series, A World Trigger to My Heart and Back Door. Part 4, of course spelled F-O-R, squared, Kisamu versus the World Crime League. We shall begin. They say that sex is a lot like a hot dog. It's best when it's filthy, rolled around on the floor, and covered in a couple of band-aids. Wait. No, that's not very erotic. Shit, let me just... Where's that backspace key? Just start over. Sex is a lot like cake. It's pretty good in the mouth, but it's even better up the poop chute. Ah, yes. That is the ticket. Good sex is what binds us together. Not like one of those fetish porn sites. No, I mean like more like those Chinese finger traps you used to get at the arcades. It's a statement of love. And the love that Osamu Mikumu has for Kitora... Kitora...
I...
McBitcherson?
That's completely wrong.
It's going to be essential for surviving the war that is to come. Kind of like how love was the most important part of Lost. And that is the last time Lost will be mentioned in this part, because John Locke is off banging supermodels.
Yay!
So let's step back into the always sultry bedroom of Osamu and Kitora, where the border agents are fast at work, being naked, without any clothes on.
Hey, Dick Basket, did you remember to set the DVR tonight? Well, I love sucking you dry like crocodile with his sand powers. I'm not doing it at the cost of missing my show.
Oh, yes!
Osama replied, instinctively flinching.
You wanted to record the new buddy cop action drama comedy series starring Liam Neeson and Conan O'Brien, correct?
Yep. Super tall Irish entertainers beating up jabronis. I'm sure...
It's jabronis. It's a common
I'm sorry.
Word.
No, you're
jabronis.
Wrong.
It's a surefire hit of the season on a revived G4, no less. All right, then. If that's recording, then we may proceed to lovemaking.
I thought you called it fucky squish squish time.
That patent's pending.
With that, Kitora began riding Osamu's bulging man cannon like one of those shitty kids rides from the mall. It's close enough, you get it.
Hey, Kitora, do you think Tommy and the rest of the Power Rangers are happy?
What?
Kitora responded with a mouthful of ham. And I'm not talking about the deli meat. Hey-o! Woo! Giggity! Woo! Hubba hubba.
The Rangers from Mighty Morphin. They're still making new Power Rangers set in current day, so in-universe, those five teenagers with attitude would be like in their 40s with jobs and kids. Do you think they're happy?
Why wouldn't they be?
Kitora's mind was a tad bit occupied, beating Osamu's big pink mask like it owed him money. It didn't, though. At least not in this one. Neat idea for the sequel, though. Osamu's penis gains sentience. Carry on.
Well, because they're not Power Rangers anymore. They cameoed and got their powers back temporarily a couple times, but they'd have still been in their mid to late 20s when that happened. Now they'd be too old to be Rangers anymore. And think about it. Imagine you were a superhero once, but now you can't keep doing it because you're an adult, but there are other kids still being the same superheroes, and you just have to live with that. It's gotta be hard.
Osamu said as he awkwardly bit down his lower lip while Kitora did that thing with her fingers and his prostate that he likes. You know the thing I'm talking about. Yeah.
Tough titties. Everyone gets old and dies. Maybe Voltan never told them that.
Zordon.
Osamu corrected.
It's gonna be rude. Youchers!
Whoops! My hand slipped and I accidentally punched you in the dick.
Kitora nonchalantly responded, like in that way that you totally know that she meant to punch him in the dick there for correcting her.
Well, fair enough. But I really wonder if Tommy and the others are happy and okay with that. Like, it's one thing to recognize you're getting older. Ow! But those kids used to... Oh, God, my nuts. Those kids used to defend the planet from galactic invasions, and now the biggest concerns in their lives are about whether or not their school tax payments should be coming out of their escrow.
Kitora sighed, barely in enough of a mood to get in position for reverse cowgirl.
Look, the real-life actor for Jason went on to become an ambulance driver, so maybe in-universe they all followed similar paths. They became Power Rangers to help everyone, so even if they aren't super anymore, they're still out there saving people just the same, as doctors, caseworkers, teachers, or whatever. So yes, I'm sure they're all very happy, because ultimately, they still are Power Rangers. Once a Ranger, always a Ranger after all.
How long does this conversation go on?
Kitora said as Osamu reached climax, firing off thick webs of semen all around the room like his dick was Spider-Man wrapping up the Green Goblin. And not that super lame one from Amazing Spider-Man 2, the amusingly bad one from the first trilogy. I think Patrick Stewart played him. I don't know. I'm not IMDb. Look it up yourselves.
Attack the heart! Oh, right, that's my line. Thanks.
Osamu replied, his eyes uncrossing from that orgasm.
Less talking, more spelunking.
Kitora said, raising and offering her rear. On the animal planet, I believe they call this position presenting.
This is getting really gross and uncomfortable. God damn it. Fuck you, Chris. Oh, in there? But it's so dark in there. What if there are ghosts?
Oh my god. in there guarding a pile of treasure. Pound my territory!
At this point, you, the audience, are likely super aroused. But you might also be wondering how Osamu was able to recover from an orgasm so quickly. Fear not, for this glaring plot hole is actually very easily explained. You see, when you use a Trion body, you are able to recover your stamina at a hyper-accelerated rate. See, thus, this isn't a stupid example of poor writing, but in fact a useful feature. To your follow-up question about why Border allows their agents to use these bodies for sexual purposes... oh, hey, look, Osamu's about to go to Fudgetown. Let's all look at that.
Wait, wait.
Kitora blurted out, pushing her feeble boyfriend off with a dull thud and a soft cry, the crying coming from Osamu.
I just realized I didn't do my marksman practice today. I'm gonna get rusty if I don't get some shooting in.
Look, Kitora, you can't go to headquarters now. You're naked, and we burned all of your clothes so that you'll be naked forever. Plus, they're closed.
Then I guess I'll just have to use the next best thing.
Kitora snatched Osamu's wang and pointed it towards the wall, cocking his cock, much like how Roman Reigns cocks his fist before that big silly Superman punch of his. Oh, wouldn't it be awesome if the Shield showed up right now, but they're all smoking hot chicks? Because you know, gangbangs are great, but I'd prefer not to look at a screen full of dicks again for the first time. For the first time, they need to fix that backspace key. Where was I? Oh, right! Kitora tumbled across the ground, furiously hand-jabbing Osamu to use his loads as bullets, expertly destroying all 10 of Osamu's humbles that she was aiming at. By the end of it, there was smoke coming from the tip that she blowed off in that cool way action heroes do. I don't completely understand the science of it, and don't ask how. Friction. Go with friction.
Sweet Christmas.
That didn't sound very orgasmic.
Sweet Christmas.
Is all Osamu could mutter in his euphoric glaze.
Although I think you just gave my penis an Indian burn.
Native American burn, you insensitive swine!
Osamu frowned. He couldn't believe he had been so ignorant. This was almost as bad as the time he was playing spades and called someone a renegger. It was just too close. Anyway, this isn't an after-school special, so the two of them are back at it with some foreplay. Doing very erotic and sensual foreplay, like, spanking? I'll be honest, the porn I watch doesn't normally have foreplay in it, so I'm just kind of guessing here.
You're always so considerate and thoughtful, Osamu. Except for that one time you got, like, insta-sniped 3 minutes into a match. Ha! You really bumped that one up.
She paused.
That's where you're supposed to come in with, I'll show you a good boning. Great googly moogly, Osamu. That was one fucking softball.
I don't like softball. I tried to toss the ball back to the girls once, and they ended up breaking 7 fingers.
Of course you did.
Kitora said, exasperated. Oh hey, that was a pretty big word there. I should keep this momentum going. Refulgent. Papaya.
That's 6 letters.
Baratheon! Oh, yes, I'm quite good at this. I'm like a regular R.L. Stein over here. Where was I? Oh, yes, Osamu being lame.
Yeah, the girls won't let me play softball with them. Even when they don't have enough players. One time, they actually played a screw crow?
It should be scarecrow. I can't check every misspelling.
Well, you did put Baratheon in there and pretend it was a real word, too, so... Anyway. One time, they actually played a scarecrow instead of me. He ended up hitting the game-winning home run, and the ball knocked my vanilla ice cream to the floor. I tried to demand he at least pay for it, but things got tense, and... Well, the girls had to pull him off from hurting me.
Osamu, this was an inanimate scarecrow, right?
Of course. What's inanimate? Why?
Never mind.
Though mentally, Kitora told herself, just picture Ninomiya as she continued to ride. The sexy times continued for quite some time, but a strange silence hung in the air. Usually there was more apologizing going on. It didn't take a genius to see something was off. Kitora knew something was amiss.
What's on your mind, fart muncher?
Do you think I'll ever really get better?
Osamu asked.
Yeah, sure. Your character development is probably going somewhere. You just learned about the spider and shit.
Yeah, but can I ever really consider myself on the same level as Border's Elite? I mean, you have people with amazing special abilities, incredibly high trial levels, and super cool uniforms like Nasu's squad.
LOL.
But what do... God, that's a terrible typo, Chris. What do I've got? What do I have? I mean, a pretty sweet uniform, sure. But I've got lower than average try-on levels, no particular combat expertise, and no side effect.
Maybe, but you're like the captain and shit.
What do I really bring to table as captain, though? It's not as though I'm a master strategist. I'm not a genius. I'm not some inspiring leader. So what makes me worth all of this time and effort?
Kitoa pushed herself off and gave Osamu her full intention. Alright, like, almost full. Like, she's probably still fingering herself or something.
Listen, dork. I try not to be nice to you all that often, because then you'll get used to that shit. That's not gonna happen. Like feeding a dog too many table scraps during dinner. Except Scotia. She's such a cute doggy who deserves all your table scraps. Oh, wait. Kitoro wouldn't know who Scotia is. Fuck, I've been writing this in all of her quotes. Crap, I really gotta fix that backspace key. Anyway, I'm saying that you've got heart, Salmu.
Oh, great. Who's Scotia? So I'm the lamest building block in Captain Planet.
Yeah, heart was a pretty queefy in Captain Planet, but it means something's there. You've got a powerful conviction that you refuse to compromise on. You're not in this to fight monsters or kill neighbors, right?
No, ma'am, I don't want to kill anybody.
I just don't like bullies.
Exactly! Osamu, your dedication and drive far surpass that of anyone else in Border. It's not about how many flips you can do or how much treon you have, because the most important thing in Border is having people willing to give every last ounce of themselves to the cause. By now, we've all seen how far you'll push yourself. And you do that while always trying to take the high road, no matter how challenging. Does that remind you of anyone? Any particular heroes?
Captain America!
That's right, yeah, Captain America. You got that right. He's Captain too. You're both Captain. You totally got what I was going for.
I never thought of it like that. I really am like a Steve Rogers pre-super soldier serum. Thanks, Kitora. I know now that I have to keep on fighting. It's not about living up to some elite expectation of myself. It's just about being more like Captain America.
That's my man.
Kitora said with a smile. Or actually, she only smiles when she's looking at herself in a bikini magazine or being praised by a senpai, so I guess instead of smiling, the furrow on her brow just lessens a bit. She does kiss him once, though, causing Osamu to climax like a fountain of jizz, coating the room in a thick white goo, much like that scene in Ghostbusters after the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man explodes. And try watching that scene now without feeling awkward. Oh, rest of the finale. Their fears put to rest, the happy couple gently laid themselves down in bed and cuddled together.
Kitora, I think everything is going to be all right.
Just then, a noise disturbed them from outside the window. It sounded like movement, and the two of them slowly crept out of bed and approached. Their hearts beat as one. They swallowed their fear as they prepared to engage their intruder together. As a couple, they steeled themselves, whisked open the curtains, and there before them was a tiny being clad in a cloak, furiously masturbating as it watched them from the outside. It climaxed, spreading its load all over the window before happily exclaiming, "Fash thinks so too!" The end! Dot, dot, dot. Question mark? After credit scene.
Fast credits. Written by Rollo T. That's it.
I did everything. And also, I guess they voiced a couple of people. Kitora and Osamu stopped to rest after the danger passed. It took almost 2 hours to clean all that cat jism off their window, but now it was finally over. Finally, they could rest. So they thought. Until the door to their room slowly swung open. A small figure walked into the room, cloaked in shadows. Was it that cat assassin returning to jerk off into more of their furniture? No, it was something far worse. The figure stepped forward, revealing itself to be a child no older than 3.
Hello, mother. Hello, father.
Gasp! Osamu and Kitor were speechless. Who was this strange child? Where did he come from? Was it truly their offspring? And if so, did having a child mean an end to their wild and elaborate sexy adventures? Was this the end of the fanfic? Oh, here, stand back! A voice called out. In a flash, a man stepped forward, beating the child and savagely punching it in the skull with a fist coated in steel. The child fell to the floor, leaving the couple to marvel at their savior.
Infamous Planet!
Oh, yes, right! It's me, Infamous Planet! And it's the entire universe out there full of your limey offspring that are all buggering it all up. So get your clothes on, because we gotta go out there and punch every single one of them. And this time, I can be bothered. Osamu and Kitor will return in World Trigger to My Heart and Back Door. The sexy baby punching spree across space and time. Everybody dance.
We only have so many strikes on this YouTube channel. So, how did you guys enjoy it? Nick, you seem to love every moment.
Enjoy is such a strong word.
Do you need something stronger? Like it was the greatest thing you ever saw?
How do you feel, Annalisa?
Well, my husband just got home as I shouted, pound my turd cutter. So, that was a little awkward.
He's like, what are you doing?
That's the best. Okay, it's the best one ever now.
I just had to kind of gesture at my computer.
You're like, it's the podcast. Does your husband know about this podcast?
Yes.
Okay, there you go. He should be able to easily explain it then, right?
Yes, but the awkwardness is still there.
No, the awkwardness is what makes it lovable. See, I was inspired to write this fan fiction, inspired by my favorite porno of all time, which of course is King Dong. Which, if you've never seen it, it's a classic. It is a man having sex with a woman, all the while a man in a gorilla costume watches from the window masturbating.
I see where the inspiration came from your own work.
You see it right there. And I thought, what better way to do it than to not address the last fanfiction at all, beyond having Froge there masturbating on things.
Oh my god.
So, I like paying things off. I think this was a browsing success. I think we developed and started the video podcast in just the right time. Imagine what this would be like if we hadn't had video. We wouldn't be seeing Nick anger the whole time.
He's
broken
anger.
Him.
It seemed like anger.
It's not anger. It's
disappointment.
Mostly shame.
Well, this was something new, you know? And maybe next time we'll get something different, you know? Who knows? I think this all worked out exceptionally.
It's more awkward to just voice the one part than to read the whole thing. So,
well, this was a chance for you guys to get into character. I was considering directing you as things went along. I was like, more sensual! More erotic! Charged with more erotic energy!
No.
But, yeah, I decided not to do that. Plus, my voice is already kind of starting to go, so, you know, I didn't think I'd really have it in me to yell at you guys while we were doing
right.
it. I think you guys both put in fantastic performances. I felt a chemistry there, which is hard, you know?
We're never going to do this again.
Like, Seth Rogen can't just get that with anybody. He tries, but it's just not always there. What you had there, though, that was real. That was great acting. I believed it. I believed you were two love-torn wanderers finding romance in the battlefield.
Okay.
You say so.
As always, it's like, so I'm just going to take you off my Skype then, if you guys don't mind.
Blocked, 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 blocked.
Okay, we've got all the plugs out of the way already, so I think we got to close this thing down now.
Yeah.
We've been talking for like 3 hours. So.
Almost. Just 3 more minutes, Nick.
Oh.
Are you sure?
No.
Alright, fine. Oh, wait, I'm not. Right, now go ahead.
Alright, hi. Post note, because I've completely forgot about this. I forgot about 2 things in all of our, you know, doing closing credits and stuff like that, because we had a very big distraction coming up. There, first of all, the recommendation we're taking is Green Blood, which is a seinen series that was recommended to us by Superia 5000. Superium, sorry, 5000. It's about post-Civil War America, so that's going to be a very interesting series to read, I think. Very big note, from next week, our special guest is going to be Tekking 101, who is a Bleach reviewer on YouTube, who does big video reviews of each chapter as it comes out, and so yeah, we're gonna have him on, and he is presumably going to have a bit more of a positive opinion of Bleach than we usually do, but I think it's gonna be a very interesting conversation we're gonna have, so look forward to that. That is gonna be our plan going forward, so thanks everybody, bye.